Well, please rise. Susan, you're a guest. Would you like to lead us in a pledge to our Father?
She said no, thank you.
No, thank you.
Oh.
She won't say no.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Alderman Sidney. Our clerk will now take the roll call.
Councilmember Watson.
Present.
Councilmember Henson.
Here.
Councilmember Olson.
Here.
Councilmember Ingram.
Here.
Councilmember Mutler.
Here.
Councilmember Zimmerman.
Here.
Councilmember Goodrich.
Here. Okay, next up is the public comment period. This is the period where the public can come talk to the council on anything that's not on tonight's agenda. The agenda items, we have a list up here, but we're a little more casual in Ferndale. If you want to talk on agenda items after we've looked at people who have signed up, we'll just look in the crowd. You can raise your hand and we'll bring up and we'll let you talk for 3 minutes each for as long as you want to go. So anything that's not on the agenda, someone can come forward now and speak to the council. So do I have a taker? Welcome, sir.
Thank you. Fire away.
Yes.
My name is Rich Warner, and I just wanted to introduce myself to Youth Council. I'm the pastor at Christ the King Community Church here in Ferndale, and I've met a couple of you and already. And I just wanted to let you know that on behalf of our church, we just appreciate all the work that you as a council put in through our community, and let you know that you're regularly in our thoughts and in our prayers. And also just wanted to let you know that as a church, we care a lot about our city, too, and we're here really to serve our city and not just to be out there doing our own thing. And we're here to serve our city. So I just wanted to, on behalf of our church, just offer our service, however that could look. We've got it just recently within the Pioneer Center, which is right by Rite Aid there. Great space, and we don't just want to use it for ourselves, but want to kind of offer it to the city. It sits empty almost the whole entire week, so we love to see people in there. But yeah, we're here to serve the city, and if there's ever anything that we can do as a church, whether that's helping out with projects, helping out with different needs the city has, just want to let you know that we as a church are, that's what we want to be about. We want to help, we want to serve, we care about our city.
Sounds like a volunteer for the cleanup day.
Yeah, we're like,
exactly. Careful what you're doing.
We have your number.
Rich, tell us about some of the past involvement with the street festival. You guys are very involved with that, or have been, at least in the past.
Yeah. Up until this year, we're not going to be quite as involved on a whole scale level. We'll have people involved, but not like the last few years. We've actually been overseeing the whole entire kids street area and putting together all the different kids activities, helping organize the different acts and that sort of thing. But yeah, this year we won't be quite as involved because the lady that we had doing that is no longer around, so, yeah.
Okay, any more questions for Rich? Thank you.
Rich is one of the good guys. He means what he says, and you guys are going to see great things from this group.
Yeah.
Awesome. Right.
Thank you.
We would hope that all pastors would be guys.
There's always exceptions.
Okay, before we get Ernie up, so anyone from the audience, there's a little bit of changes, maybe confusion. The presentation on the BMX bike park, that person couldn't make it, so we've moved the BMX bike park presentation to May 20th, the meeting May 20th. So you're here to talk about BMX bike parks that's going to happen tonight. So, Ernie, you were second hand up, so we'll go to you. Welcome, welcome.
Ernie Hatter, 2178 Ferndale Speedway. I am tired of cars going over 25 up and down the street. You can't even work out in the city right away to clean it up. And there's no recycling class citizens. There is no speed limit sign from Vista to Hendrickson on Ferndale Terrace going west. Are we second-class citizens that we don't get speed limit signs put out there? You go down to Correll Park, they got every kind of thing. This is our neighborhood. Slow down. So on down the line. They're all over town. I drive around and look to see what's going on. You drive down the road, people pass you on front of the church, I'll make a left turn right in front of them next time it happens. Thank you.
Thanks, Ernie. Anyone from the audience for open? Okay, come forward. Welcome.
Good evening. My name is Robin Peters. I serve on the Ferndale Arts Commission. I'm also a teacher at Ferndale High School. This past year, the Arts Commission has had the goal to become more involved in the Ferndale community as a whole. We held a garden party last July at the Louisa House, and we will again this July. We had Art in the Park last September at Pioneer Park, and we will again this year. We're revving up to do that again right now. This year, we've also jumped into the literary arts a little. I hope you noticed this past month that we had a poem in your pocket day, and we also had a free verse, free verse photo project contest that went very well. And we've also had poems daily in City Hall and on our Facebook site every day also for the last month. Now, we partnered with the Chamber to hold another contest. This is for a poster for the Ferndale Street Festival, since this is the 10th year for that. And we think these are all good things. We think these are all good for our community. I'm sure you all agree with us. So I just wanted to say that to give you an update, but I also wanted to tell you about something that happened a few weeks ago for me. I went to a mosaic conference. It's the National Mosaic Conference for Mosaic Artists. There were about 500 of us there. And while I was there at this conference, one of the speakers came up front and talked about public art. And I thought, oh, I want to hear about public art. What's going on? How does that relate to us? And the truth was that she's involved with something called the Global Mosaic Project, so she went to Haiti. Now, Jacmel, Haiti, where she was, is very different from our community. In 2010, they had an earthquake, which pretty much devastated their community in a lot of different ways, especially economically. And so she went there thinking, okay, we're going to mosaic this huge wall, and it'll be good for the community. It'll make them feel empowered and feel some joy and pride in their community. And so she went and brought a seed team with her, raised up some local people. There were five family men that were trained in mosaic to work with them. And then hundreds of children from the community came also. Unemployed people who were on the street and had nothing to do came and worked with them. And they worked for it was less than 2 weeks, and they worked and completed this huge, long mosaic wall. I thought it was really cool. To me, it was totally inspiring to hear about this, so I kind of wanted to share it with people. Because not only were people trained, and now they have a profession and they're training others, there were hundreds of children who were trained, and they've moved out into their city, too. They've done somewhere in the area of 60 more projects since then, and this just happened last March. The wall has become a gathering place. Tourists are going there again, and now the artists go there to sell their work from day to day, too. So there have been socioeconomic advantages for that, and just all kinds of evidence and proof that for this community, art was a really good thing, and it's helped them in a lot of different ways. And I just wanted to share that with you because I found it inspiring, and I know that you're supporting us in the Arts Commission and helping us to try to do things in our community that will be good for it, too. Thank you.
Great. A goal for you. Three words.
Question.
Brent had a question.
Lindale Glass Building.
Yeah.
Ooh, I like that.
How about a public American mural?
Do we have any murals planned for this summer?
Yeah. We haven't talked about that lately.
Lindell Glass, public market.
Councilperson Ingram?
Well, if you haven't talked about a mural project, you were requested to do a mural last year.
From where?
Propane Industries on that huge storage tank wants somebody to come down there and turn it into an orca.
Hmm. Oh, Propane Inc.
On
the Bounty.
Oh, and they will supply all the paint. They just want artists to come down and turn that tank into an orca.
Could you send that paper to
talk to that Arts Commission lady right there in the second row.
Uh-huh. Mentioned this week. We have a meeting this week.
I didn't care. I don't think it got to the Arts Commission.
Don't go away.
So down in Haiti, was this a wall or a floor or a sidewalk?
It was a huge wall. I can't even tell how long it was. And the woman, Laurel Drew, the person who's in charge of it, she couldn't even tell exactly how long it was. I don't know. I can't even.
And
it was, I would guess, at least 100 meters long, if not longer.
And if I'm not mistaken, they're really taking chunks of rubble and broken glass and pottery and stuff like that.
It was mostly just recycled things, yes. They didn't go out and buy expensive new stuff.
Yeah, good job. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for coming. So anyone else for the open public comment? Boy, this is where I'm a good, we're having a great night. So yeah. You were first.
We're going to be all week.
Come forward. Welcome.
Hi, my name is Chrissy Baker. I'm here to introduce myself. I'm the new administrator for the Community Resource Center right next door. I'm excited about the job. I'm working on increasing the community awareness of the center. It's kind of shocking to me that so few people know about it. It provides so many different resources to so many different people. Some of the things I'm doing... one of the first things is I'm getting a reader board. It was ordered today, and thank you, Mr. Mayor, for approving that. It will be placed on the wall right over next to our door.
Did.
Oh, you did.
I have the email.
And it's going to, I'll be posting information about the Resource Center, things that are going on, job opportunities for people. We do have a center in there. It's a room, but I call it our employment center. There's a computer there that anyone can come in and use, telephone calls, resources for helping find employment. I want to post information on that board. If anyone has anything they'd like to post, city opportunities, city events, things like that, definitely city building, so we'll do that. The next thing I'm working on is getting a sandwich board for the front. One of the things I was wondering, I believe that it's okay if we put it on the sidewalk.
Our community development director is writing notes to himself as we speak.
Okay, all right.
And probably we'll converse with you about that.
Yes,
okay.
We will.
That's great. That's great. Thank you. Other than that, I'm just, like I said, my goal is to, once we get a front desk person and I have some time freed up, I want to go out, introduce myself to community members, business owners, and see if we can't get them more involved in the center and have it do what it's meant to.
Councilperson Watson.
You're still open 10 to 3.
Oh, yeah, Monday I'm sorry. Friday. Yeah, I'm sorry. We're open Monday through Thursday, 10 to 3, and on Fridays from 9 to 3 because there's court.
Welcome to Ferndale.
All right. Thank you very much.
And it's a very small sign that for the door, just next to the door. Remember the email? It's just going to be next to the door?
No.
I can send you
my
email.
I have the email. I kept it.
And does it say approved by mayor?
Yes, it does.
And I want to see that.
Okay, thank you.
Not the first time. Okay, thank you for coming. They're in the back.
Hi, I'm Carol Burge. I live at 5426 Nimbus Place. Yes, it's like the cloud. It took me a while to figure out all the streets are named after clouds there. Anyway, I'm here to encourage all of you members to attend the next chamber luncheon next week on the 15th. Not only am I a co-sponsor with Molly Simon from the Boys and Girls Club, she'll talk about 3 minutes on the June auction. I'll talk probably 10 to 15 minutes on becoming a cake maker and my husband, particularly, becoming a cake maker husband. Anyway, it should be fun. I have not talked to a group of people since working for the University of Alabama, where I used to corral all the parents into one room while their students were being advised because, you know, how parents get all up in the business, telling their students what classes to take. All your students. Anyway, I used to play a trivia game with all the parents while corralled in the room. I used to play trivia from the Wendy's hamburger. Dave Thomas autographed his book, Well Done, for me quite a few years ago. I'm probably dating myself. Anyway, and I do have one trivia question, and I would like for you, Greg, to exempt yourself. Keep an eye on the council members and staff. And Mayor Jensen, you must exempt yourself. And keep an eye on the first hand raised for my answer for the answer to my trivia question. All right. Are we ready?
Yeah.
Why are Wendy's hamburgers square? Hands up. Oh, come on, y'all.
Okay, not a lot of hamburgers. Oh, there's one there. Okay.
No. Any other guesses? Any, just throw it out there.
Right.
They fit on the grill better than the round
pattern. No, I mean, I have this great super prize package.
Oh,
come on, anybody.
Can I use the Google machine?
Somebody can Google it. Google count.
They come from square cows?
The
Because they don't cut corners.
Exactly. Dave Thomas hated to cut corners. You know, everybody knows he was an orphan and lived in foster care and had to scrape and pilferage, and just he came a long way in life.
Whatever that prize is, I would recommend you donate that to the Boys and Girls Cup auction.
I think that.
And you are more than welcome to
do that. Yeah, good idea. I would give it right back to you to donate to the Boys and Girls Cup auction.
But anyway, I encourage everybody to attend next week's luncheon. It will be exciting. There will be chocolate everywhere.
That's May 15th. That's Wednesday, May 15th.
Don't forget your donation.
Sam.
Yes, we do.
You have to.
In memory of Sam.
I didn't know.
It's not alcoholic. It's apple cider.
Sam, how do you find it? In a minute.
Guilty plea when none pursued.
Okay, so enjoyable evening so far. You have the second comment period. Come forward. Always happy to hear from students.
Oh, extra credit time.
You get extra credit.
Oh, that's pretty
secret.
Can I adjust this?
Oh, yes, you can. Yes.
Okay, hello, City Council. My name is Zach Young, and I've got a question for you guys. We got a roundabout over by I-5, and we've got a dead end. Is that Thornton Road that isn't connected through? I was wondering if you guys are going to connect that at any time in the distance.
That $14 million will do it tomorrow.
Yeah. Mayor, tell him.
$14 million.
I'll get my checkbook.
Oh, okay.
Yes, that was to answer you in a better term is that was always the second phase of the Second Avenue extension, and so the railroad actually gave us money to build that road from the roundabout all the way to Thornton, and then they closed that railroad overpass. So the railroad paid for that road because there's one house that back there. One person lives back there.
Oh, okay.
And we hope someday to build an overpass and connect Thornton to the freeway that way.
I'll look forward to that day.
We hope so.
We hope it happens in your lifetime.
For your check. Okay, anyone else? We're doing great. The extra credit thing.
All right.
The bonus points. We've never had anyone from the Squalicum Storm speak.
My okay. Hi, I'm Ronnie Joe, and I go to Ferndale High School. I'm on a track team, and I was just recently informed that our track is condemned. We are not allowed to have any more track meets there. And I was wondering if you guys knew about that or anything. Because it's the track is too dangerous to run on. Just wondering if you guys had any ideas. I heard it was going to be 7 years before they got that repaired.
Wow.
Didn't know it.
I don't know. It's because the school district is a separate organization, so I'm not sure. You'd have to ask Ms. Clinton.
It's colder. Jory, are you aware of that?
What, the track surface itself or the stands there?
Oh, the track surface.
The track surface. And so we would not typically review that. I know that the school district is planning by 2016 to have a full review of all the projects that they need to do within the next 20 years and to identify how to fund those projects. It sounds like it might be more immediate than that. So school district meetings are probably the best way to go. Underline the importance to the student athletes for that.
So to inform the public, so they understand, is you can't have any home track meets.
No. The middle school can, but high school regulations,
That is hard. So you're on the road all the time.
Yep.
That's terrible.
When does the school board meet? How often?
The school board meets the last Thursday of every month.
That's the last one or the third?
I guess if you look for a goal is to, a great example is our library that just got funded by some unbelievably great generous donations by local people because we advertised the need. And I didn't really realize that and haven't read this. So as a former track athlete, that's a terrible thing. So their thing is maybe to do a student campaign to let people know.
Yeah.
Maybe there's a donor out there.
Okay, thank you.
Good
Thanks.
Luck. Thank you for talking. Okay, we're doing good. Any more? No, you only get one.
Yeah.
Uh,
I would imagine. Okay, so it would be Craig Cole of SSA Marine at the Chamber Luncheon next Wednesday? 15th. Okay. Okay, moving on, because we do have a big agenda. Council, I would entertain a motion to approve the consent agenda.
So moved.
Second. Okay, moved and seconded by Councilperson Olson. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries 7-0. Okay, next up, a presentation very dear to my heart, a presentation by the Domestic Violence Commission. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Good evening, everyone. I'm Susan Marks. I'm the director of the Bellingham-Whatcom County Commission Against Domestic Violence. I did not prepare any questions for you all, so I think it may be more fun maybe next year that I'm going to bring the questions you all answer, and then that's how we'll figure out what work we're doing.
There's no prizes?
Well, the prize is if you like the presentation, then you can be a part of our work and help us end domestic violence in Whatcom County.
Good answer.
So, yes. Ready for the next? Are you my switcher? All right.
I am. Possibly.
If
there
it
we
works.
Go.
Otherwise, I'm going to be jogging back. I couldn't even get the trash car here to help me in. We can go back and forth. Okay, so the commission, just a little update for everyone. We were formed in 1998 by a joint resolution between the city of Bellingham and Whatcom County, so we're a joint city-county commission. And then in 2006, all of the other cities in Whatcom County passed resolutions of support. And so part of the purpose of being here is when all of the government supported us, one of the things we said is we would go back to them on an annual basis and just kind of report on what the work we're doing in the community so that people, first of all, are reminded that domestic violence is an issue that is touching the citizens of your community, and second of all, know what we're trying to do about it. And our mission is to provide leadership in our community's efforts to prevent and reduce domestic violence. So I was like, oh, no, I can't read, but I'll just read it there. So what we do is we try to do systems change, policy work, large community-wide awareness. We don't do any victim services or perpetrator treatment. There are people in other agencies to do that. But what we really do is try to change the way our systems and our communities respond to domestic violence, make that response as helpful as possible to the victims, try to hold the perpetrators accountable, and then try to make it so that domestic violence doesn't continue. Now we're ready. So we have quite a few representatives from the City of Ferndale on the DV Commission, including Mayor Jensen, Chief Knapp, in the back, and then also the superintendent of Ferndale Schools, Linda Quinn, is on the commission, and Manuel Retta, who's from the community. And I actually forgot when I was putting this together that we have a couple other people who live and or work in Ferndale. And our last commission meeting, at the beginning, we always go around. There's 28 members, and we go around and say who we are and where we're from, and just seem like they're all on their own. I'm Mayor Jensen. I'm from Ferndale. I'm Chief Knapp. I'm from Ferndale. And then Jolie Reinhart, she is the operations manager at Phillips 66, and she says, and I live in Ferndale, and then or I work in Ferndale, and then Bill Elfo says, and I live in Ferndale. And then the next person who wasn't from Ferndale was starting to feel a little ashamed that they're not from Ferndale. So we have great representation from the city of Ferndale. We, I think, have a very strong partnership with this city, and it's really because a lot of the leaders have stepped up and volunteered to be on the commission and help represent. So it makes it so that we can do a lot of work here and I think make a lot of difference. So just a little data for you on how domestic violence is happening in Ferndale. Our number's always all a year or two behind based on when we can get the data and get it out. But in 2011, the Ferndale Police Department responded to 123 domestic violence offenses and 126 verbals. So verbals are a domestic violence call for service for law enforcement where no arrest is made because there's no probable cause. So really you're looking at the Ferndale Police Department responded to approximately 250 domestic violence calls in a year. And domestic violence offenses represented 20% of all the offenses that are responded to or reported to the Ferndale Police Department. And these numbers actually, in 2011, they increased from 2010, so not only were there more offenses, they're actually the exact same number of verbals, and there were more offenses, but the percentage of all offenses increased. So it used to be a smaller percentage of all offenses, and that increased. And that actually was true throughout Whatcom County, so we're seeing domestic violence, and I don't know if other crimes are going down or domestic violence is increasing, but the ratio is changing. And then in the courts, in 2010, our court data is 2 years old, there were 97 DV misdemeanor charges, domestic violence misdemeanor charges filed for 50 defendants. So a lot of those people had multiple charges. And then there were 14 domestic violence felony cases. They were filed in Whatcom County Superior Court from the city of Ferndale. And also in 2011, so countywide, our felony numbers greatly increased, domestic violence felonies filed, and also the percentage of domestic violence felonies as the percentage of all felonies. So, again, that ratio increased. And I actually talked to Dave McCracken to see if he had a reason for explaining that. And he said they're just seeing more domestic violence felonies. It's not that they're doing anything differently. It's not that they're charging them more than they were, that they're just seeing a greater percentage of domestic violence felonies come through their office. So I think that's just important for us to know that there's some that the numbers are still there for domestic violence and that some of them are pretty high-level assaults. But I think when you look at these numbers, 123, 126, 20%, it's hard to really think about what that means to a person in your community or hard to think about what that means to your community. And so I just want to focus a little bit on one case, and this is actually in the it was in the papers from last summer in the city of Ferndale. There was a woman who lived here in Ferndale, and her partner attacked her. And when he attacked her, he punched her in the head. He choked her. He sat on top of her and had his hand over her mouth and nose, was trying to strangle her or suffocate her. And during the attack, she managed to kick the screen door out of her window. She was trying to get out of her window, and someone driving by saw what was happening and called 911, and so the police intervened. And she ended up going to the emergency room. He went to jail. He was prosecuted. But I think what it shows to us is that this one situation, this woman, she had to go to the emergency room, and it took her time to heal from her physical injuries. And beyond the physical injuries are the emotional injuries of being in a relationship where someone harms you in that way. And this man is perpetrator of domestic violence and spends a great portion of his life thinking about how to control and how to be violent towards another human being so he can control them. And he went to jail. And not only these two people, but everyone else is impacted by them. I don't know if they have children, but if they have children, they're witnessing what's happening and learning about what it's like to be a victim or perpetrator. The person who drove by and called 911, that's a fairly traumatic thing to witness and to intervene and to know that he could have very well saved her life, that person who called 911. And then the family and friends and neighbors and other people, employers who touch these people, especially thinking about the woman and knowing that someone that they care about could have been harmed, and that was a very lethal assault. Someone who is choking someone is someone who's trying to kill someone if he's trying to cut off her breath. And if someone had intervened, that very likely could have led to a homicide. So all those people around her knowing that how close she came to being hurt by someone, a place where you're supposed to be safe. And then the people that we think about, the police officers, the prosecutors, the courts, the jail, we think that that's their job to respond. It is. They're getting paid to do it. But there's always an impact on those people when this is what they're watching. And then they go home to their own families and think about how nice it is to be in a safe home and that there are people who don't have that very basic need. And then the report was in the media and just that everyone in the community is reading about this. And it just brings it all home to people, people who are experiencing that in their own homes saying, that could happen to me, or people who didn't even realize that it was happening in their community. It's now something they're aware of. It's just any time that one incident happens, it really ripples out and touches the entire community. And so each of those 123 people who had an offense or 126 people who had a verbal, all of those people are touching so many other people in the community. And especially when we're talking about numbers, it can be really easy to write off and say, oh, this city, there's 11,000 people or however many, and 123 isn't that many, but it touches so many people from that one or two people in the incident. That story not only shows how it touches the entire community, also is really indicative of how we've focused our work over the past several years. And we've really kind of taken two new foci. We're focusing in two new areas. One is on lethality and risk and high fatality instances, and the other is on how we can end domestic violence so the cycle doesn't continue. And we have three main projects that we're working on, just high lethality cases and risk management and risk assessment. And part of the reason for that focus is because we are seeing increasing numbers of high lethality incidents. We're hearing from law enforcement prosecutors more anecdotally that that's what they're kind of seeing is a lot more violence within these relationships. And so we just want to look at those cases. And also there's decreased resources. And so we need to think about where we're going to focus our resources. And I think every victim deserves to be served, but sometimes we have to focus and keep the ones who are most dangerous safe. So we did this past year, we did a fatality review. And people may remember in 2009 and 2010, there was a spike of intimate partner homicides in Whatcom County. Between the 2 years, there were 10. And there's been one every year since. And many, many years we've gone with zero intimate partner homicides in the county. And so there's been this spike since 2009. And so we did a review. We picked three cases. And we looked at every public record, Child Protective Services records. We got family members to speak to us about what they knew about the relationship. And we just put this together. Each case ended up being about a 50-page document. And we had a panel of about 40 to 50 people from different sectors of the community come through. And we looked at this case and said, what happened? Where did the perpetrator turn into the kind of person that would kill someone? And where did the victim, where were the points where we could have intervened to help her? And we are going to come out with a report. Our draft report is ready, and the final report should be done within a couple months, and we will distribute that throughout the community. But just gives us some ideas of how our community can respond in ways that will hopefully prevent homicides in the future. And then one of the other projects we're working on is risk assessment, and Ferndale Police Department is going to be working with us on this. It's a project we're going to be starting out in the fall where all the Whatcom County law enforcement agencies will be doing risk assessment when they go to a domestic violence call. And they will be assessing victims for risk, and if they come in as high risk, they will connect that victim to a domestic violence advocacy agency so they can get increased services, safety planning, anything they need to be safe. And then offenders that are identified as high risk are going to go to, there's going to be a high risk response team that will be focusing on offender monitoring and containment, so they'll be looking at offenders at high risk and trying to find ways to keep those people either out of the community or ensure that they're going to appropriate treatment and just really hold them accountable for what they're doing. So our goal is really to focus on those really high-risk cases. And then we recently did a project where we worked with the Whatcom County District and Superior Court, so when there's a domestic violence protection order filed, there are many cases in which the court has the authority to order that that perpetrator surrender his weapons if the weapon was used in any way to threaten the victim. And we worked with law enforcement and prosecutors and victim service agencies so that when the court orders that, the order is enforced, and so that those firearms then have to be surrendered to law enforcement. If they don't, that person is held in contempt of court. So if a judge makes that order, that order is followed. And before, judges weren't always, first of all, aware that about firearms, and so we've helped the victim service agencies, helping victims make judges aware. And then if a judge makes that order, then it will be followed now. So those are kind of our lethality and risk projects. And then we're, focusing on ending domestic violence, which has kind of been our goal for a long time, but we haven't made a lot of strides in that in the 30 years since the domestic violence movement has been really going. And probably about 2 or 3 years ago, we did a new strategic plan, and we were thinking, if we were going to end domestic violence, what would need to be done differently? And one of the things we talked about was that we have been doing an amazing job throughout this country in serving victims of domestic violence and getting them services, but that is not at all decreasing the numbers in domestic violence. And the missing piece are children who are, if they're raised in this, they're more likely to become perpetrators, they're more likely to become victims, although it's not 100% in any case. And then also perpetrators, that even if you get a victim out of the situation, you get her in safe housing, she's on her own, she's happy, they find another victim. And so as long as that perpetrator is out there, that they'll keep finding more victims. And so we have two projects focused, one on how children and how to respond to children who are exposed to domestic violence, and the other on how our community can help perpetrators more accountable and help them so that they do not continue being perpetrators, because many of them, that's not all that they want to do with their lives. So both of those projects are relatively new, and they're in the works. But especially the perpetrator response piece is really exciting, because I've been talking to people nationally about this, because we're trying to get ideas of what can a community member, what can a neighbor do, what can a pastor do, what can people do. And no one really knows. People haven't spent a lot of time thinking about this. And there's several different groups that are thinking about it now, but we're kind of at the forefront of that. We're one of the groups who's spending some time on it, so that's pretty exciting. And then we have one special project focused on children in the Ferndale schools, so I just wanted to bring that to everyone's attention. I think some of you probably are aware of it. We got a grant from the U.S. Department of Justice, Office of Violence Against Women, and we were one of only 9 sites in the entire country to get this grant. We were chosen as a pilot project. And we're working with the Ferndale middle and high schools, so all 4 of their secondary schools, to address sexual assault, stalking, and dating violence. And this first year, Stacey Miller is our DV Commission staff member who's leading up this project. And this first year, we have formed, each school has a youth advisory group, so they have a group of youth who are leading that project for that school and raising awareness in the school. We have a district-wide coordinated response team, which has people from various sectors of the school district, as well as people from the community, including Kathy Watson has come to some of those meetings on that. And our goal is to come up with a response so when students are experiencing these issues that they get advocacy, they get support services, and that students who are starting to become perpetrators are getting services so that they don't grow in those behaviors, and then just so that the school knows how to respond when these issues happen. And this past year, the youth advisory group started doing awareness-raising activities in the schools, and Mayor Jensen read proclamations against Dating Violence Awareness Month in all the schools, and it was really the first step in raising awareness, so that's been really exciting. So we have 2 more years under that grant, and by the end, we're supposed to be a model for other districts this size throughout the country. So, and hopefully, more important to me, is throughout Whatcom County. You can go to the next. And then I just want to spend a couple minutes speaking about something that's really specific to the city of Ferndale. And this is on the domestic violence specialist. And I don't know how many of you know Carol Donovan. She is housed in the Community Resource Center right next door. And she is a prosecution-based advocate. She serves all 5 of the small cities. She serves victims who have cases in those municipal courts. And it was a position that was formed in 2008. It was formed because this is a basic service provided in the Bellingham Municipal and the Whatcom County District and Superior Courts. And there was no one to support those victims in the small city municipal courts. She is the person that tells them what's going to happen step by step. This is what's happening in the court system. This is what's going to happen next. This is what people are going to ask of you. This is what you may have to testify to. And then she provides them referrals to other housing, financial services, whatever they need to be able to get safe and be free from that violence. And she provides them with the ability to feel justice and feel healing from that process. So this position has only been going since 2008, and just an idea of, in 2012, she served 63 victims, and she provided 321 contacts. And since the inception of the position since 2008, a total of 315 victims and 1,746 contacts. So she provides quite a bit of time, and each of those contacts could be an hour, 2 hours, depending on how much someone needs. Some of them are 5 minutes, just these are the numbers that you need. But she provides all the time that someone needs to be able to stay engaged in the criminal justice system. Thank you. And I've been talking to, so one of the things that I'm trying to do is get this position to continue. We all get to the funding in the next piece, but I've been talking to the victims who she has worked with. And one they talked to from the city of Ferndale, she was in a very dangerous situation. Carol and law enforcement who's worked with her said that they think if she did not stay engaged in the criminal justice process, that this was someone who was going to kill this woman. She was very isolated. She didn't have any friends or family in the area. She had never been a victim of a crime before. She didn't know anything about how the criminal justice system works. And so Carol was the one who walked her through, this is what's going to happen in court. I will be with you. You will not be alone. This is where you can get safe housing. This is where you can get money. This is an address confidentiality program for you so that he can't find you. So she was the person that kept her engaged. And when I talked to her, I think when you read the words on paper, it's like, oh, yeah, I needed her help. But just the way that she presented it was just so passionate that she needed her help. She didn't know anything, and she couldn't have done anything without her and without her giving her the information. And she really felt that she would have dropped out of that process without Carol there with her. And that would have allowed her to be back in this relationship and allow this person to continue. And with her engaged, it's likely he can be charged with multiple crimes and hopefully kept away for a while in order to go to treatment so that he won't do this to his next partner. And then we did that fatality review. One of the things that we identified, which is not going to be a surprise to people, is that victims who live outside the city of Bellingham are more isolated. All the services are located in Bellingham, and all those services say they will go anywhere in the county to serve someone. The fact is, if you live in the city of Bellingham, it's very easy to catch a bus downtown, or you're downtown anyway, and just walk into the offices that you need. If you live outside of the city, it takes some time to set up an appointment, to get an advocate who has the time to drive out here and meet with you, or victims are trying to get the bus or drive into town, and it just decreases their ability to access any of the services they need. And so we identified that victims from outside of Bellingham are more vulnerable in many ways, are receiving less services, and that having that person who is serving the cities as the person, that domestic violence specialist, is a need for those communities to be able to keep a little more connected. And then the last part is, the fun part is money. So if we are going to keep her doing her job, the history is that from 2008 to 2012, this position was fully funded through a grant from the Office of Violence Against Women, the U.S. Department of Justice. And this year, it's 50% funded through the Office of Violence Against Women. They expect us to make it sustainable in our own community, which is why there's that funding is drying up. We also got contributions from the City of Blaine, and the Ferndale Police Department wrote a grant to the Verizon Wireless Foundation, so we got some of that money. And then we got STOP grant, which is state funding that comes to the entire community to address domestic violence, and we got some for this project. But we still didn't get enough money, so there has been a reduction in services this year. So she's providing less services than she was last year, and there's some ways that she's not available. And one of those things is she doesn't go to court with people as often as she used to. So now she's doing a lot more court prep, and they have to go to court by themselves, which can be really scary. And one of the cases we reviewed in the fatality review, someone told us that they went to court, and their perpetrator came and sat next to them. And when she was sitting there in court, he sat right next to her, and he looks at her, and in her ear he whispers, "Boo," to try to scare her. And she said that was the creepiest thing, and she had no one there with her, no one there to sit between her and him, no one to say to the judge or the prosecutor or anyone, "This guy is her perpetrator, and get him away from her." And I think just having someone there in court with you is huge, and that's something that she's not able to provide anymore. And then in 2014, is next year, we have no grant funding from the Office of Violence Against Women. We have about $15,000 between leftover money from the Verizon Wireless and STOP grants. We have about $2,000 to $3,000 from domestic violence fee assessments, which are something when someone's convicted of domestic violence crime has to pay to the city where they're convicted. So that's coming from all five of the cities. We have a total of about $2,000 to $3,000. And if we don't get more than this, with $20,000, it's not enough of a position that's even worth having it. We really need her at least 60 to 70% time to keep her at a minimal level, which is what she's at now. And so if we don't get enough funding, that we will lose those services. We will lose Carol, and we will lose those services for victims in these communities. So we're looking about needing a total of about $65,000, including what we already have. So probably about a total of $45,000 to $50,000 additional. And the way that what we're asking for this year is we're going to ask each of the cities to contribute whatever they can, as much as they can, to help that position continue. And we will send out, once we know what all these amounts are exactly, by mid to late summer, we'll send out a request, a formal request in writing to each of the cities, and we will, based on population, we'll ask people to contribute to that position to keep it funded. And I know funding is tight. I know you're probably all looking at me saying, where are we going to get $20,000, $15,000 when everything else is happening? And I would just say, I hope that when you see that request, you think about each one of those victims and what they're going through. And if that was someone you know, how much you would want someone, just how personal that is, and how much you would want someone there with them to walk them through the process and help make it so that they can stay engaged and be a part of that process. And then how much do you want those perpetrators off the street? So maybe you have a daughter or sister, someone who's starting to date, and you don't want them to end up with that perpetrator. And one of the best ways to do that is to get them in jail and hold them accountable. And that's another thing we found in our fatality review is perpetrators who went to jail who were held accountable when they committed a crime, it stopped them from doing it in the future. It really made a difference for people. So if anyone has any questions or comments for me, either on our general work or on the domestic violence specialist, I'd be happy to answer any of those now.
Yes. Council questions for our guests. Councilperson Zimmerman.
There's been lots of stories about jail overcrowding.
Yes.
What's the percentage of domestic violence perpetrators in there?
In jail. Hold on a second. My data report. I knew I'd be glad I brought this.
Good thing we practiced, huh?
I know. Yeah, thanks for asking something that I know the answer to. In jail, in 2011, there were 1,518 jail-related bookings, which was an increase from 2010, and the percentage was about 19% of total jail bookings were domestic violence-related.
Yep, 19%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that was a slight increase from 2010.
Any other questions for our guests, counsel? Okay, seeing none. Thank you very much.
Yep, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, next on the agenda is the Transportation Benefit District meeting and a resolution updating Transportation Benefit District capital projects list. And I'll go to Public Works. Welcome.
Good evening, Council. Wait, okay, this is the TBD board.
We're the TBD board,
yeah.
Now, right?
Oh, so
do
they
we
have
the...
I probably should.
I thought you just switched.
Did you?
Well, but I have to formally tell people.
I thought we had to close and then
yeah,
become the TBD.
Yeah, we've done it before.
Yes.
Okay, so,
sure.
So to do this in the past at 6:41:17, I'm going to adjourn the regular council meeting, and I'm going to go to the meeting of the Transportation Benefit District Board, consisting of the members of the City Council. So right now you are members of the Transportation Benefit District Board. Now to our Public Works Director.
All right. Good evening, TBD Board. Staff is making a recommendation to the board to revise our project list and add our TBD project list and add the Smith Road chip seal, which would be from the east city county line to the Bounty Road, with the exception of the overpass, to add this to our list to have this work completed this summer. We would be partnering with Whatcom County, because they have a chip seal project already scheduled, and they would just be extending their project into the city limits. So this is an opportunity for us to partner with them and extend our sales tax dollars and make the best use of those. Very cost-effective approach.
Questions for staff from council? Councilperson Goodrich?
I make a motion that we... What are we doing? Resolution to update the... Move to approve the resolution to update the TBD project list.
Second.
Any further questions? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries 7-0. Janice, before you leave, though, for the public and the students, because it was significant in committee to know how much we've saved in terms of this project by partnering with the county on a road project. And this is a new system, but I think it's important to know those amounts and the public should know that.
Yeah, I don't have some of those dollar amounts with me tonight, but a chip seal is probably maybe three times less than doing like an asphalt overlay. And then plus by partnering with the county, they have the crew that does the work. We're only paying them for actual cost. We don't have to pay for any markup, so there's no profit involved, just the actual cost. So there isn't any way that we could get that work accomplished, you know, any way cheaper.
So good job. We like working together. That's a lean procedure. Okay, at 6:43:44, I'm going to close the TBD meeting of the board and move back into regular council. So next up on the agenda is the public hearing regarding park impact fee revision ordinance, and I'll go to our community development and planning director, Yuri Burnett.
Good evening, council. On April 1st, council adopted the revised Parks, Recreation, and Trails master plan. that guides development of parks and trails over the next 20-year period. As you may recall, it replaces a plan that was established in 2005 that had anticipated what I think most people now come to understand is probably too aggressive parks and trail system. It had about $30 million in capital costs. It also had approximately $15 to $20 million in maintenance costs. Those maintenance costs would be the responsibility of the city. The new plan reduces those costs significantly, but then does very clearly state what the maintenance costs are for the city. What we are proposing here tonight is to revise the Parks, Recreation, and Trails impact fees. Back in 2011, as a result of urban growth area changes, we removed about half of our total residential area. And as a result, we then needed to cut out about a third of the parks and trails that were proposed in that master plan. We also, at that same time, removed then approximately a third of those park impact fees. Staff reminded council at that time, or asked council at that time, what do you want us to do? And in April of 2012, the council said, well, let's relook at our parks planning and let's come back with a new parks plan. So the understanding was that those reduced park impact fees were relatively temporary in nature. So what we're proposing tonight is to bring the park impact fees back up, but not as high as they were prior to 2012, about 10% less than what single families or new development of single family residences paid from 2005 to 2011. We propose single family impact fee of $1,726, multifamily fee of $1,134. This is based on the per capita or per person share based upon the population growth that we're anticipating. Happy to answer any questions that you might have and go from there.
Okay, Council, lots of questions, discussions. First up is Councilperson Watson.
I'm just curious when this will take effect. So if someone has already put their plans into you, they won't have to pay the extra, but if someone waits a week or two?
The fees are vested to the date that you actually pay the fees. So hypothetically, someone could come in today, as they actually did, and pay the fees that are in place today, and then they've paid those fees. If someone has applied and they don't pay the fees until after this goes into effect, which would be next Monday, they would be subject to the new higher fees.
Okay.
So there is an incentive, I suppose you could say, to pay park impact fees before Monday.
Okay. Thank you.
Councilperson Mutchler?
And Director Burnett, you haven't quite warned me over yet on this, so because I'm a little confused.
Mm-hmm.
So when we had the larger UGA, we anticipated X amount of parks.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe we had a formula that kind of is based on population ratio to acreage.
Absolutely.
It's kind of a lazy way of doing it, but it sort of worked. Then the UGA is shrunk, and so we then, less parks were going to be built. But what confused me at the time and still today was there would also be less homes going in and fewer amount of less impact fees. So there automatically would be less money coming in because there would be less houses built. Nonetheless, we reduced the park impact fee by a third. I'm not quite sure how that worked in the first place. But I was happy
mm-hmm.
that park impact fees went down. So now we've adopted a new plan, which I thought was shifting our emphasis from parks to trails.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's more interest in that, and that's more affordable. So I'm not quite sure how we got back up to an original amount, which you're about $100 short of it, but we're pretty close to it. So I'm not won over yet on this.
Well, first of all, the reduction of the UGA didn't change in any way how many homes were going to come. It just meant that the homes that were coming were going to be more densified. We were still expecting exactly the same amount of population. It just wasn't going to be able to sprawl out as much.
And thus the same amount of impact fee units, but we could charge less. Okay.
Absolutely. The same amount of units, and it's just how much we charge per unit.
Okay. That part's answered.
Now, as far as the ratios of how much is development paid for and how much is city paid for or other funding, I think is really kind of at the heart of the issue then. What we are proposing is because these projects that are eligible for impact fees are not necessary unless growth occurs. If no more growth occurred, we don't need to spend about $10 million in capital costs. We could just do the maintenance of our existing. But because growth happens, we need approximately $10 million worth of projects in order to respond to that growth. So what we're proposing is that development pay for half of that cost. Half of the cost that growth creates, growth pays for. And the city and other sources such as grant revenues, volunteer labor, and all that pay for the other 50%. The reason why we've proposed adjusting the ratios so development pays for more is partially due to what you heard in the prior presenter. Is the city is being asked to contribute at possibly higher levels than it had previously because the federal government, state government, isn't also being able to share the cost of these improvements in the same manner as it used to. Grants are harder to come by, and we have less staff to go after them. So we are also seeing historic highs in development right now, and that goes into peaks and valleys. And right now we might be at or close to a peak, and we know that at some point we might go down to a valley. But we have seen that development has been able to pay these fees previously. We're also wanting to introduce into this, in the same manner as we have before, the ability to reduce those fees. And what we're proposing to do, and what we've heard from a lot of folks in the development industry, is that when there are parks and trails going in, they feel that they are a part of the community. They live here, they work here, obviously. They earn their livelihood here, but they are separated from actually contributing to these community improvements. So what we are allowing in here is for certain projects, their ability to actually provide their labor, their materials, their expertise in building some of these and then getting park credits for it. The Star Park is a good example where we're proposing to develop a catalog that has individual features, a playset or something, that would cost $2,000. If a developer were to purchase that for the city, then they would get those equivalent credits. And that's not something they've been able to do before. It's something where they've indicated that they'd really like to give back. And my last example is the Primrose Trail Park. The city is going to be able to complete that trail that would otherwise cost about $30,000, for $216.
But there'll be some credits applied back to developers of a certain dollar amount that the city wouldn't collect. I mean,
one to one, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, there's some money in a sense that we've lost. We've brought Peter to pay Paul.
If you approve this.
So if I'm paying this new impact fee of $1,700 and change, it's paying for a half of the future park needs and keeping the level of service up in the future. So we're still not even asking the full. We used to say around here, growth pays for growth. Growth pays for half the growth, still.
Growth pays for half of the growth and really none of the maintenance. So you could even go one step further and possibly say that it's paying for about 35% of parks and trails when all is said.
Then my last question. So with this action and the previous actions, we have excised, we've gotten rid of the ratio formula, the X acres per number of people. Is that still in there somewhere or is that kind of gone?
It is only in there probably beyond 20 years when we don't have a tragedy of the commons, where if we had a centralized park and we had 10,000 people that all use that park, then it would exceed the carrying capacity of that park and we'd start to see really that park really degrading. So that's in there as a backup so we can always look at that in the background to say, oh my gosh, we have Vander Yacht Park that is now being overused. But the primary measurement is making sure that people are connected to their parks.
Thank you.
Councilperson Ingram?
Yuri, we had a fabulous presentation by our PERTAB director at the last committee meeting and pointed out how many parks we have in the city of Ferndale that are totally undeveloped. Can any of these fees be used to develop a park that's already delineated?
Absolutely.
We have this and we need to develop it.
Absolutely.
Sweet.
Mm-hmm. Okay, any further questions for staff? Councilperson Hansen?
Urban growth dictates what? A prediction of what population is eventually going to happen?
Yes.
Okay. So is it a correct statement to say that today's developer is paying not only for development that's occurring inside the city, additional population, if you will, in current lots and yet to be developed lots that are currently inside the city, but we're asking them also to pay for predicted urban growth that may occur in the future?
Not necessarily, but possibly. So, in our revised parks plan, the emphasis is on trails, and the vast majority of those trails are going to be within the existing city limits. It also includes the possibility, or includes three additional new parks. Two of those new parks would be within the existing city limits. The third would be just north of the city limits between Vista and Church. So the idea, similar to most of the taxes that the city has, is that developers are essentially contributing into a pool of money that the city, you folks, can determine. We will now use the power of that money to build a facility, a new park, that individually we couldn't have purchased, and possibly even leverage grant funding, volunteers, and all of that. So it may be that Joe Contractor's money within the city that he submits today would, within the next 10 years, because that's the limitation on impact fees, be utilized for a park that is in a piece of property that is as yet not annexed. Realistically, since we have that 10-year window, it's more likely that the people today in 2013 are paying in the city. Maybe when we're talking 2015 or 2016, theirs might be spent in another part. But it has to have some nexus, that the folks that are living in this residential development will have a reasonable expectation of using that other development, or that those folks today are using a development that was paid for by someone 10 years ago for that same idea.
Councilperson Watson?
I'm just wondering, do you have any way of knowing how much in an average year this would bring into the city? Because we're raising it up quite a bit. I'm just wondering how much you think the additional funding would be. I know it's hard because you have no way of knowing, you know, how many developers are going to come in.
Well, right now, for comparison, in 2009, 10, and 11, we struggled to get up to $100,000 per year. About $99,000 is our debt service for our two most recent park impact fee acquisitions, Griffintown and the Riverwalk. So 9, 10, and 11, Mr. Peterson sometimes was not able to pay it with park impact fees, and we had to use the general fund to pay for that debt service. We're doing substantially better than that right now. We are on track, and I wish Mr. Peterson was here, on track for $150,000, possibly a little bit more, provided that we collectively don't start spending that money, $5,000 here and $10,000 here. The city would be able to put itself in a position of, when a development were to be proposed on a piece of property where we've identified as a potential park, we could come to those developers and say, we will credit you for dedicating, plus we will pay you for the fair market value of that amount of land. It positions us to be proactive. And that is, I think, a concern of Parks Board, where we were just staying barely above water. And as we see development come in, one of the basic tenets of the parks plan was identify park acquisition potential at the time or prior to development, instead of just finding the small leftover parcels that really don't make much sense.
So do you see this more as you want to get more money for more debt service for a larger project, or are you thinking more money for smaller projects to spread around the city, like another Riverwalk big project or smaller trails? And I mean,
both. And, you know, to be able to react, I feel like I'm the defense secretary, but to be able to react nimbly to the hot spots when they occur. So in some cases, we might be able to identify a small project where we can go out to our contractors, as we did with Primrose, and say, do you want to help us build that? In other cases, there might be something where it's a complete full capital project. We need to get engineering. We need to do land acquisition. Yeah. Build to react to all those different possibilities puts a city in a fantastic position that we're not in right now.
Councilperson Zimmerman?
Yuri, we've had some indebtedness on the Riverwalk and Griffintown. When are those paid off? Do you know?
I can ask the finance director.
Because, I mean, there's a number of years, and then that money will be freed up for other projects. But right now we're kind of in debt for those bigger projects.
I believe
projects.
It's closer to 2020.
Is it 2020?
Almost a decade away.
Give Sam a couple seconds. He can probably have that answer for you. Any other questions for staff? So before we go to the public hearing part, I think it's interesting to talk about a move. As council and the public may have heard or not, you should know, is every Friday our city meets for lean meetings every Friday morning. And that's a procedure where we go around the table and we ask our city employees to look at ways to make your city more efficient. What can you bring to the table that offers suggestions to make our city more efficient? Now, it's interesting in the last couple weeks where if you listen to the governor race, our present governor, Governor Inslee, mentioned lean as the solution for our city in about every political speech. And lean is not a complicated endeavor. It's interesting that our county, Whatcom County, just hired a consultant and spent a full day with all their employees for a full 8 hours teaching them how do you do lean. Well, we didn't need 8 hours in the city of Ferndale. We didn't need a half an hour. We just said, why don't you start giving us ideas on how to improve your city, how to make it more efficient? We asked for two-second improvements. Lean is two-second improvements every day. It's not difficult. And so I'm proud of our staff for always continuing. They've come up with some just amazing ideas, and it's a great endeavor. One of the endeavors is that when we have public hearings, we have this speech that I have to read before you, every single word, whether there's no one in the room or where there's anyone that wants to speak, I have to read the speech word for word. And it always was, and here's the beauty of lean. Lean says, well, why do you have to do it that way? Is there a better way? And our great clerk basically heard me whining about saying this long speech every time and said, well, let me check and see if there's a regulation that says it absolutely has to be worded this way. I know it has to be read, so last week in council, you moved it forward. You'll see a resolution come where we'll have a new, leaner version of this speech. You approved it tonight on consent. So this is the last night you'll hear this long speech, and I'm sure the audience will be thankful.
Nice job, Susan, for suggesting that.
That was a very lean approach.
Yeah. A public hearing is a formal opportunity to give testimony to the council for consideration in the decision-making process. If you intend to speak, it is necessary to sign up the sign-up sheet that will be available on the counter located in the front of the room. Or you can just raise your hand after everyone else has spoken. Written comments may also be submitted to the city clerk prior to the beginning of the hearing. When the mayor calls your name, proceed as follows to the rostrum. Proceed to the speaker's rostrum, microphone, clearly state your name and address. If you're speaking as a representative for another person or organization, so state. State whether you're a proponent, opponent, or neither. Limit your comments to 3 minutes. After all comments are heard, if you have something to add that has not already been stated, at the discretion of the mayor, you'll be given an additional 2 minutes. There will be no demonstration during or any conclusion of anyone's presentation. During the public testimony period of the public hearing, the council, staff, and audience will remain silent. After your presentation, council members may wish to ask you questions. After the last person has spoken, the hearing will be closed and the council will enter a regular session. The subject of the hearing will usually appear as an agenda item for council discussion, decision, or referral. The audience may not comment during the council's deliberation unless questioned by the council for clarification. These rules are intended to promote an orderly system of holding a public hearing to give every person an opportunity to be heard and ensure that no individuals are embarrassed by exercising the right to free speech. So, at 703.37, I open up the public hearing. Do you have anyone on the list to speak? Okay, any in the audience would like to come forward and speak on this? Do my speech as he lasts longer. We have a guest. Welcome, sir.
My name is Bob Bell, and I'm at 2085 Main Street. I own the Ferndale Mini Market. I came here this evening to talk about gas taxes, but I couldn't help myself. I sat and listened to the domestic violence thing that was presented tonight, which was an incredible presentation. And one of the things I heard is they need funding. And I'm an advocate for the small independent business. And one of the things I think fees are doing to that in this community is they're holding out the small independent business. There's been so many small independent businesses that have tried to come into this community, whether it be an ice cream shop, whether it be a bakery, or whether it be whatever, that try to come in, find they can't afford to be here. And every time impact fees or any of these fees are raised, taxes are raised, it creates a problem. Back in 1985, there was two small independent businesses in Ferndale who were approached by Walk-In Crisis Services. And they had a similar thing we just heard here. We need funding. We need funding badly. We're not adequately able to take care of the people that are victims of domestic violence. Those two independent businessmen built a bingo hall for them to help fund Walk-In Crisis Services. That organization, which ran Bingo 262 here in Ferndale, generated $500,000 to $600,000 a year for Walk-In Crisis Services for almost 20 years. And I think you really need to think about the small independent business and what it means to your community, and it's being closed out. And so anytime you go to raise a fee, I think you really need to look at that. I think you need to think about Walgreens and Rite Aid. Then think about the pharmacy that was here before, Donna Pullman, a lady that gives her spare time to this community, and the small businesses that give their spare time to this community, or their money, or their promotion. And I think that this council, this city, needs to start understanding why does Bob Bell keep coming up trying to decrease impact fees and decrease these things. The reason is you need the small independent business if you want to be unique. If you want to be like every other community up and down the freeway, that's great, and you're going to rely on the big box store coming in creating all this money for you. But it's a small independent business that comes in and they roll up their sleeves and they get involved in the community. So anyway, I just think that's something that should be considered.
Questions for this guest?
Yeah, just to clarify. Yeah, and thank you, Mr. Bell. And you do contribute a lot in our community. I know that firsthand. Park impact fees, I don't think, are paid by business. I think it would be residents. People who would use the parks would pay for that. So I believe this particular fee would be obviously, if you build apartments, you'd be hit with it.
Yeah, but aren't you also, if you were to build a retail building, would you not be paying into park impact fees?
I don't think so.
No. Okay, did not know that.
No.
Okay.
You could if you wanted.
You can voluntarily donate to the next park project.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
We accept all. Is there anything else from the audience? Back here? Welcome, sir.
Thank you. My name is Tim McAvoy. I live at 2535 Eldridge Avenue in Bellingham, Washington. And I just want to follow up a little bit on Mr. Bob Bell's comments. And we're a supplier of fuel in Whatcom County. And I think the thing that's the most difficult thing for me about the potential of the 1% gas tax
Time out for a second. You're on the. Sorry to interrupt you, but okay. You're on the wrong subject.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We'll hold you, and I'll make sure that you're the first to come up and talk on the gas tax. Thank you. Okay, anyone else on the parks impact fee discussion? Back there. Thank you. Welcome.
Carol Birch, 5426 Nimbus Place. I just have a quick question on
he's right behind
the formula that you arrived to create the impact fee and how it's broken down between residential and multifamily.
So we'll allow him to speak in the microphone so it's recorded properly. And you can stay right there because we're probably not done.
So the methodology is fairly consistent with what we do for nearly all of our impact fees, where we take the total capital costs, we identify the development share of those costs. In this case, we're proposing 50% of those costs. We divide that then by the population growth over the next 20-year period. That's the population growth that Whatcom County has assigned to the city. So that's already a known number independent. Where did you go, Carol? A known number independent of this park impact fee calculation. And that gets the per capita share, you know, per person. And then we use Washington State Office of Financial Management statistics for how many people on average live in a multifamily unit, which is 1.82 per multifamily on average, and then 2.77 per single family. So the equation is fairly simple. We plug in all of the known numbers, and then it spits out that number.
You still have the microphone.
That's all I wanted to know, is how the formula worked.
Okay, great. Councilperson Watson?
Could I just ask a question in relation to that of Mr. Burnett?
Okay, to Mr. Burnett. Okay, and she can sit down?
No, Carol can sit down.
Okay.
sorry, Mr. Burnett. How accurate have the population growth numbers been from the county, like over like a 10-year period or 20-year period? I'm just wondering because we're basing a lot on they think we're going to have like 8,300 more people 20 years from now, and I'm just wondering what the error bars on that. We can have 6,000 or 15,000.
It has actually been fairly close if you track back a full 20 years or even a full 30 years back. In the mid-90s, there was an estimate for really accelerated growth. So we were expecting, I think, by now to have another half again as much population as we have. But if you look back at the estimates in 1980, it's almost exactly what we have now. And again, we're going to be going through this again in 2016 to look at those. Right now, 8,300 over the next 20 years, that's about 400 per year. We're tracking that quite well now, and especially if you figure a 2% growth in rate, the per year numbers are going to be higher later on in the planning period just because there's going to be more people having babies.
Thank you.
Okay, back to the public hearing. Hand up. Welcome, sir.
Perry Estridge with the Whatcom County Association of Realtors. I really don't have an opinion on the impact fee as it relates, but it was kind of interesting to hear the discussion about what fees do and whether or not, you know, does it contribute to the cost, does it not, blah, blah, blah. A little interesting factoid within the state of Washington, and think about this. For every $1,000 that a home goes up, you drop 19,000 citizens from the potential to buy that home. So just something to throw out there for you to think about when you're talking about impact fees and what that does to housing affordability. We're much smaller in Ferndale, less, you know, people trying to buy houses. But I can tell you from experience, when people are out there looking at what they can afford, $1,000 make or break a deal.
You say it again?
Very easy. Huh?
Would you say that figure again? $19,000?
$1,000. Within the state of Washington, this is a statewide population. For every $1,000 that you go up, you lose 19,000 potential buyers. So, yeah.
Thank you. Anyone else from the audience like to speak? Okay, so at 7:12:20, I'm going to close the public hearing and we'll revert to council discussion or deliberations. Councilperson Goodrich. Oh, wait a minute. Before we went on, you had the answer for
councilperson. I did. I was only able to find one, but they were both done pretty close to the same time frame. So the Riverwalk is due 2027.
And
that's Whatcom County. That's a 1%
interest. That was a 20-year bond. Then. Yeah. Must have been.
It was a 20-year bond issued in 2007, and it will go through to 2027.
But through the county for just 1%.
Through Whatcom County for
1%. My memory's fuzzy, but I believe that Griffintown was 15. But I
concur on that.
I think so, too.
But between the two of them, we're paying X number of dollars of...
Approximately $100,000.
Impact fees are still going to.
Approximately $100,000
a year.
And $50,000 from some year to 2027.
So. Excuse me. Thank you for having us interrupt you. Councilperson Goodrich?
I can't support this for basically two reasons. One is I'm not a fan of increasing the fee this soon after. I feel it's not fair to the builders. We set a fee, we lower a fee, we raise a fee. Especially at the beginning of kind of a building season, and we're telling them now, well, if you haven't got your plans into the city by Monday, your fees are going to go up. I might have a different attitude toward this if we were in October, November, and the building season was over, and it would give the developers time to look at their projects over the weekend, winter, to see if it, these new higher fees are feasible for their building. To say that, you know, we're going to change the fees in a week, I don't think that's a fair thing to do to our developers, especially if they're still trying to pencil out. And we heard last time that, you know, the margin for them is very narrow, and this could kill some projects. And I've always said vacant land doesn't generate any revenues for the city, and I'd rather see some revenue than no revenue. And so we've heard from Yori that the projects are up. I don't know if that's just because the fees are lower, and now we got the new building season with the lower fees, so it's more attractive for them to build. But we're still in a tough economic time. Things aren't going to be getting any better anywhere soon. So I think we just need to keep it where it is for now, and maybe relook at this at the end of the summer and at the end of the building season.
Okay, I have Councilperson Hansen and then Mutchler.
Question for Yori, and then a comment, if you don't mind. How was the 50% derived? Where did that come from?
A combination of looking at whether or not the city would be able to fund the approximately $200,000 a year at a higher level. For instance, if the city were funding at $50,000 or 50% as compared to 30%. Looking at what the historic levels were, the close to $1,900 for the previous impact fees, and not wanting to cross that, wanting to come across at a lower threshold than what had been historically paid for. Also, it was a round number.
I was on the council when the almost $1,900 fee was proposed, and that was arrived at rather arbitrarily. It's like, we want $19,000, so now let's make everything else fit. And the numbers were, that's why you ended up with 30%, 30%, 40%. Now we want to go to 50%, 25, 25. Mm-hmm. And does everyone understand what that means? 50% is developer paid, 25 is paid for by city coffers, and or it could be volunteer labor, that sort of thing. It gets into that 25%, and the final 25% would come from grants. I voted against the park impact fee when it was proposed at $1,900 because I felt it was too high in comparison with all the other fees that a builder has to pay in order to build either a single-family dwelling or an apartment unit. I'm hearing figures from some developers that are approaching $23,000 to $33,000 before they can walk out the door with a permit in their hand. That's how much they will pay. That isn't part of the construction. It's part of the fees. I would feel much more comfortable with a different formula that might take us partway. What are we now, 12?
We're approximately 1,300 right now.
Okay. Yeah. Somewhere between the 1,300 and the 1,900 that it used to be, but not $100 less. It would make it like an additional $200 less. I may formulate that in terms of a motion or an amendment at some point, but something to think about would be to raise the park mitigation fee, but not raise it all the way at this point, because I think 50% is rather arbitrary.
Can you clarify that 1,300 number you both just
said? Yeah, where'd you get that?
The fee...
Because you have 17...
17 and,
the,
and 11.
The fee right now that people are paying...
Oh, the current one.
The current
that's
fee.
That's not on here. That's where everyone's... People yesterday paid...
Is $1,289.27.
For everything, whether it's multifamily or single?
And multifamily is $847.10.
Thank you.
It's based on the same, you know, calculations here.
Thank you. I just didn't realize we were talking about the current.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Councilperson Mutchler?
Excuse me one second. Oh. Mel, can you close that mini blind behind you? I'm getting a glare when I look that way.
I was wondering why you're looking at me that way.
Yeah. If that does close. Thank you very much.
Councilperson Mutchler.
Yeah, I am sitting actually coming to really close numbers to what Mel was suggesting, and for the reasons that Brent actually was sharing, that I hate to see it go up so much, but I also think that we're not going to get the grants that we used to get. I think that is the new reality. And we could decide not to have parks. We could decide not to fund the parks. And I think long-term we're going to go, yikes. I'm wondering if we could go with a number in the ballpark of what Councilmember Hansen is suggesting, but include in that a step increase every year. So the developers can look at it and say, it's going to go up $100 next year and $100 next year. I'm sort of thinking starting around 14 and then not letting, you know, go to 14 now because we're almost there anyway, and then next year 15, then 16 and 17, then you're going to get there in about 4 years. So it's not one big hit at once, but I do want those parks to be funded. So I wonder if council might be interested in some kind of formula where we kind of split the difference today, but do build into this thing a stepping up every year.
So any further questions? And council, you're moving towards presenting some sort of thing to vote on, so you're moving in that direction. Councilperson Hansen?
Make a motion at some point.
Yes, you will make a motion at some point.
A couple of things, just in reaction to what John said. You can't arbitrarily pick a figure out of the air. It has to be done via a formula. So instead of a 50%, 25-25, you might be looking at a different formula. Right now, the formula is 30%, 30%, and 40%. The 40% is the city non-impact revenue. I don't know what that would
be. How much is the builder now percentage?
He's 50. 30.
He's 30. So what if we did, let's jump at the 35, then it goes to 40, then it goes 45, 50 over the next 4 years, something in that.
Okay. That was the point on that issue.
So let's stop for a second. Is Yori, we're very good at noticing the past and predicting the future. Yori sat in my office before this meeting and go, well, that's great. You've done a staff presentation based on math, and have you figured out? And you worked hard on it. This council in the last 12 years has never listen to staff or never listen to their math in terms of traffic impact, lots of impact. You guys are just like, well, we like this number, and the staff is very good. They will work on the math to make that work. So rather than work on that, the lean process is give us a number that you are comfortable with facing your citizens and being happy with them with. And Yori, I know he's not happy. I know he'll be frustrated. But he will make those numbers work because he has in the past and probably will so in the future. Councilperson Zimmerman and then Councilperson Ingram.
Mr. Mayor, fellow council people in the audience, I'm good with this. The way I see it, new homes or new people moving into town, it's a great selling point for a town to have great parks and trails. This is, you know, probably less than 1% of the total.
Are you making a motion?
I'm making a statement, but I will follow up. If you'd like a motion, I will make a motion. I will move that we accept staff's recommendation. And for the major point of that, you've added the in-kind contributions. And the Primrose Trail, it's a little trail that connects Mountain View School with Lego Lane, but it was the ability for the developer to show up with his equipment at, you know, $300 an hour and get his, you know, discount on materials and a lot of things that made that project happen. So I like the things that are in this aspect of it. And, you know, the couple hundred bucks, that's not going to be a big deal. It really isn't.
For our developer is still waiting for you to vote this in so he can finish the trail.
Yeah. Right. Well, I move that we accept the staff's hard. And we can always change it later,
okay,
if it's
a
big problem.
Okay, a second. Discussion on Councilperson Ingram's motion. Councilperson Ingram is next up. Sorry. I'm always doing
brother. All the sunshine. Hey, brother.
I never really thought we even looked alike.
Our moms get confused all the time.
Well, my only comment to this is this. I'm not a developer, but I've been around developers all my adult life. I've worked with them. I've designed stuff with them. They don't care what the impact fee is. They really don't. They're not paying it. The buyer's paying it. So what they do is they do one of two things. They'll look at that in all their impact fees, all their fees to build that home, and they'll either lowball the house and make it a cracker box, or they'll build the house they want to build and go for the higher-end buyer. And I've seen cities, folks, where they tried to hold these fees down, and it backfired on them, and what they got was a bunch of cracker box houses. If you want the city in the future to be one big Ferndale Terrace, because there's some really ugly homes up there that were built, I was told, I thought by Ernie, over at Farmers Market one time, those, most of those homes up on Ferndale Terrace are built as summer homes.
No, they were built with mobile coming in.
Yeah, I don't know where Ernie got that operation.
Well, I don't know. Anyway.
I lived through that. They were all mobile people.
Okay. Well, anyway, the point is that we can do this and let the developers figure out what they want to build. Because they're not complaining. They're building homes up by us as fast as they can nail them together. And I bet you if you raise this fee to what the staff suggests, tomorrow they'll be starting another one. And it just doesn't matter. There's two guys standing out in the middle of a lot this afternoon with big pieces of paper in their hands going, pointing to things. There's another one coming. So it's not like there's a building slowdown. And fees really don't slow down development. They just don't do it. I've never seen it. And I made this statement years ago to before this council. I don't even think I was on the council then. That where we moved from, the total fees in 2006 for a single-family residence was $56,700. Didn't slow down a bit. They built them as fast as they could nail them together.
So moving on, discussion on the motion, I have Councilperson Hansen, Mutchler, and then Olson. So Councilperson Hansen, you are up.
I'm not so much in disagreement with Paul regarding what the developer is going to do. He's going to pass it through. Where I would disagree is whether or not he's going to choose to build cracker boxes. What he's going to do is build a house he can sell. He's not going to build a higher end just because that limits the clientele. He's going to take shortcuts on what he builds so he can add it. He can put it out at a price that he can sell. That's the way it works. I want to correct one thing that was said earlier, funds from the grant community are less. They're actually probably more. We just don't have a means of seeking out those grants. And this is something the Parks, Recs, and Trails Committee has talked about, and several of us have talked about it. At the appropriate time, we will hire a parks director, someone that will be in charge of that program, and you'll all of a sudden see a lot more grants. Right now, it would be one more thing to add to Janice or to Greg or to Yori on a schedule that's so busy that they can't get it all done today. So that's why you're not seeing the grants. But I think the grants are out there. We're just not asking for them.
Before I go to the next question, it should be noted, because I want to recognize our new president of the Parks, Recreation, and Trails Advisory Board is presently working on grants for our Star Park. That's on his own time. When he has time, he has a full-time job. That's a difficult endeavor. Grants are very intensive, and Mr. Nordhaus is working hard on it, but that's a volunteer effort. And you know, so I don't want to discount that we aren't doing it, but it's a volunteer effort, and it's a army of one with assistance from the staff. Councilperson Mutchler?
Yeah, I just want to state I just disagree with the statement that impact fees don't impact builders. I think they make choices not to build because of impact fees sometimes. I know having built two homes that you add it all up and you say, okay, you either do it, you don't do it, or you do with less. I just disagree that they don't care about impact fees. I think they care very much about impact fees. We hear it all the time here from builders. I hear it all the time at Woods when I talk to builders, that they don't want them to go up because they have to pay for that, or they try to pass them on to the buyers, but they can't always do that. So I think it does make a difference.
Councilperson Olson.
In just a few short months, we're going to be at this budget thing all over again. And we're not going to have any money because we're not, we keep talking about raising fees. We keep making Yori spend hours and hours and everybody else trying to get to where we're supposed to be. And then we vote them down. And then come budget time, we wonder why we don't have any money. Yori, are we the, we have the most building going on of any of the cities in the county?
2 years in a row.
I guess that's not slowing them down, so I really don't think a couple extra $100, if we want to keep these parks and trails maintained, we got to have the money from somewhere. So I'm supporting it.
Councilperson Watson?
Question for staff. Is there any reason that these have to take effect in 5 days? Is there a way to say they would take effect later? I know, Mr. Goodrich, and I as well, I don't want to support it at this time. I feel like people have made plans for summer building, and I'm worried that now we're suddenly going to raise the fees. And if we were to say, well, we're not going to take effect until November, we would at least let people have this season of building before we hit them up with higher fees.
Well, we communicated this to builders. We have a big flyer up at the front letting them know it's been advertised. We knew that we were going to go through this process. The ordinance is scheduled to take effect in 5 days. You know, I guess that's all I'd say. Technically, could you extend it out? Yes, but we do have a master plan that's now in effect that's not supported by, or that doesn't have fees to support it.
We do have I'd consider the person that's built more homes in Ferndale in the last 3 years, probably 5 years, than any other developer, embrace the Primrose Lane concept and wants to use it because he thinks it's a great idea to use his services at retail prices for credit. That would probably be put on hold, and Primrose would have to be finished in some other way. So
if we don't raise the fees, he won't help with Primrose?
Well, because you're approving this ordinance where, let's explain it.
In-kind contributions.
Yes, he gets to take and say, I'm going to put my backhoe and my equipment and my dump truck. And let's be honest, you already floated over it. He gets to say, here's my retail price for this service. Give me that dollar credit against my park impact fees on the new house I'm building at Larson Churchill Estates.
Well, and I would even go one further. You know, as we said, one of the things that a lot of folks we talk to have said is, I'm part of this community too. So the gentleman's name is Bill Kramer, who did it. He is a part of this community, and he wanted to put, you know, his stamp on this trail.
So now I understand you're doing timing, and you could extend the timing. I would maybe narrow that. Builders are pretty good, and you could consider that, but there's an example of our largest builder. This is a very innovative program that your planning director came up with that most builders, when explained to, go, oh, I like that. I can look in Bob Bell's eyes and go, ooh, wait a minute, I could work with that. So I understand where you're going, I understand your concern, but you know, we have a trailer, we'd like to get finished. It's up to you to decide that. You can do an addendum to the motion, but the motion before you is
I guess I'm looking at it, and we're doing two different things. You're raising the fees, but you're also changing the text.
Correct.
In the ordinance. And so you're saying that because we're not, if we don't pass the whole thing, including the changing of the text, which allows the builders to do the in-kind, so at this point, there's no way of separating. You know, if we're going to...
No.
We've done that, made that conscious effort with all of our impact
fee
changes.
So it's all or nothing, basically, the text and the text changes to the ordinance as well as the raising of the fees.
Well,
it's all related to the master plan.
We'd have master to plan.
As Keith said, it would put some stress on staff to change the whole master plan. The master plan has been approved, public hearing by the Planning Commission, public hearing by the public. I don't think we could separate. We'd have to change.
I'm not opposed to the textual changes. I think the textual changes to the ordinance are good. I don't necessarily like the fact that we're raising the fee. And I understand what you've done math wise and why it's all together as one part. I just, you know.
No, Brent's the first. Brent's up first.
I'm going to interrupt because I think he was quick. Councilperson Olson.
we seem to have several council members who are concerned about developers, but I don't see any developers here. So I guess it isn't that big of a deal if they're talking at Woods and talking everywhere. Where are they?
Well, certainly, Mr. Bell and Mr. Eskridge represents builders.
He said realtors.
Yeah, builders, too. Realtors sell homes. Councilperson Hansen?
No, Brent was next.
Okay, Councilperson Goodrich?
I agree with County Councilmember Watson. I like the idea of the in-kind.
You're a county council member now.
Right. They get paid.
You called her county council member.
I did?
Yes.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry to insult you.
Actually,
that
was an insult.
I like the in-kind contribution aspect of this. I just don't like the raising of the fee because it happens so quickly. And like I said, at the beginning of the building season. So it's kind of a – I wish they weren't together. Because then it would make it real easy. I'd vote for the in-kind donation part real easily, but at this point in time, I still got to go with not raising the fees this quickly.
Okay, before you divert to that, so let's talk about that for a second.
Yeah.
Because here's the reality is that our payments that we're going now is enough to cover the payments for past obligation to parks. If you instituted your idea, we are barely making enough to make our payments. So we have these obligations to 2027. If you voted in the credit for builders, you would reduce your initial cash.
Once you do that, even if we raise the fee?
Yeah. No.
Because they could come in with in-kind donations, and therefore we're not getting the money to.
We're going to have to approve in-kind donations. So we're going to know that level going, that's nice, but we can't allow you to do that because we don't have a project because we have to balance that. It's not an easy equation.
I think you're opening up a whole can of worms there because then you could get Builder A. Yeah, we'll let you do the in-kind donation, but Builder B, we're not going to let you do it because we need to meet our financial obligations.
Project specific.
Yep.
Yeah. Councilperson Hansen, Ingram, Mutchler.
Is this a correct statement that if we were to adjust the percentages, and I'm just going to throw one out, I'm not suggesting, to 40-30-30? And that's the only thing change we made. Could this ordinance go through, including the in-kind, without...
You're doing a what-if, not a motion.
I am doing a what-if.
Yes, but he's...
So you're just saying...
I want to hear the answer.
Can Scott do the math real quick? What would 40...
Well, yeah. I have another comment to make, but
you could do that.
Okay, I'm going to move to refer this back to committee, finance committee, to work out the financial details of what the committee would like to present. I sat here, I counted four votes against it. I think we need to make some adjustment. I don't think we need to make,
Okay.
Well, I'm sorry, but if we turn it down, we haven't, then what?
Let's go
back to the committee.
Wasn't this in planning, PLU?
I think it was planning.
Yeah.
Was it planning? Fine. I don't know. Wherever it came from.
Yeah, we'll
I don't care which committee.
Once you vote. So you have a motion to refer this back to committee. Is there a second to that motion?
Yeah. Mr. Mutchler seconded it.
Okay. Councilor Mr. Mutchler seconded it. Okay. To vote on that, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Okay, so it's back to committee.
They can come back pretty quickly. I mean, just a quick turnaround. So.
I'm not exactly... We're basically going to use a calculator and punch up the numbers, yeah. Which I could do right now.
I think there's a lot of other questions. Right? I think it'd be easier, leaner.
The one comment I would like to make is that I keep hearing this building season boondoggle statement being made. There is no building season.
Well, let's
they've been building houses at churches in October, November, December, January, February, March.
Back to committee, we're stopping that discussion.
They build all the time up here.
I'll recognize you, but it's not really on a statement of the affairs. It's referred back to committee. That issue is over. So if you have something
just a statement of the staff. I don't think it's just a surprise staff. This council, as long as I know, has not ever wanted to make these big jumps in fees. I think we've got a pretty consistent track record in that. So
the only thing is the city has to come up with the lost revenue. So basically the taxpayers are paying for the difference.
Let's talk about it in committee, shall we?
Okay, it's back to committee. That issue has been beat to death enough for tonight. Okay, the next one is the public hearing on the large lot administrative flexibility.
Good evening, everybody. So staff has been looking at giving administrative flexibility to lots that are just a bit too small to be able to subdivide or to create that extra additional dwelling unit in a multifamily setting. In the staff report, you have Exhibit 1 that contains four different chapters of the code that are being amended tonight, hopefully amended tonight. I can go through each of those chapters. In Exhibit 1, the first chapter is Chapter 17.28, and this is a simple addition to the subdivision code. It's just a reference saying that all subdivisions shall comply with the other chapter, the zoning chapter, which is Chapter 18. So it's pretty broad addition to that chapter. So the next chapter, chapter 18.32, our goal is to really give those lots that can't be subdivided, that fall just a little bit short of that minimum lot size to be able to create an additional lot, the ability to do that, 10% being that number that we would like to see some flexibility to get those lots subdivided. So like an example would be in the RS 8.5 zone, you need to have 17,000 square foot minimum lot size to subdivide. If you fall at, say, 16,000 square feet of a lot, you can't subdivide it, and you're, for lack of a better word, you're stuck with a large lot in this city. So there's some other cities in the area that do allow some flexibility to this minimum lot size, essentially. So we're looking at being able to give lots though that advantage of achieving this. Go ahead.
Sorry. Now, this is a public hearing, so questions of staff not
being. You use the example of 16,000 as a lot that wouldn't. I believe the example of 16,000 still wouldn't qualify under the.
Whatever came up as a 10%, so the number would be actually.
It's 850 short of whatever it would be.
Yeah, 850 short, so it would be, 16,250, 150. So, and similarly, in the multifamily zones, we're looking at doing a 10% reduction to that for that additional dwelling unit. Basically, for a duplex on any lot, you'd need 4,000 square feet of lot area for the first unit, and each additional unit after that, you need to have 1,500 square feet of lot area. So a duplex would be 5,500 square feet. A triplex, you'd need to have a 7,000 square foot lot, and then et cetera. So going back to 18.32, staff's proposing to add this language, and I'll read it as follows. In any proposed division of land, the Community Development Department may allow one lot, and one lot only, to be up to 10% smaller than the stated minimum lot size of the zone, provided that said lot complies with all other Ferndale Municipal Code requirements, such as access, lot width, and setbacks. The city may also consider averaging this 10% lot size reduction with all or a portion of other lots within a subdivision, utilizing this flexibility so that lots are similar in size throughout that subdivision. It's very similar in the multifamily zone and the residential office zone, which allows for the multifamily type development. This is the final step in the process, in the zoning text amendment process, the public hearing in front of the city council. Back in last month, the Planning Commission had voted unanimously to approve the proposed amendments. And that is about it. I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Questions for staff on the proposal before we go to the public hearing portion? Okay, seeing none. Obviously, I don't have to reread my long public hearing speech. I only have to recite it to you once. I'm sure people will feel better about that. We have some people who want to comment on this. So at 743.26, I'll start off on the list. Now, this may be confusing as this is, you know, doing flexibility for large lot size. So I'll read down, and if you didn't want to speak or you don't want to speak, just raise your hand and I'll go to the public. So Ernie Heinrich, I think he left. Harry, would you like to speak on this? Welcome, sir.
Harry Eskridge from the Realtors again.
I've got to say, Yori knows this already, but I am a huge fan of the Ferndale Planning Department. I think any of you that I've ever talked to personally before know that as well. Ferndale gets it right when it comes to planning. For the last 7 years, I can tell you, I've been trying to get Bellingham to do something similar to this. We've talked about lot size averaging. We've talked about, you know, the Birchwood neighborhood. They talk about wanting to redevelop it, and you've got an 1,800-square-foot house on a 20,000-square-foot lot. You know, and redevelopment means, no, you just stick that house with a three-car garage out there. This needs to happen. Please let it happen. It gets more efficient use in the city. It gets it stops us from doing the sprawl. We don't have to have those conversations anymore about oversized UGAs. I mean, it starts us heading down that path. It's a good deal. It's a good deal for the city, and, you know, it was done by some professionals that we're very lucky to employ. So,
questions for this guest? Councilor Smutzler?
Yeah, because this has been in my mind since Yori brought this to us. Is 10% enough? Do you think there'd be harm to the city if we... 15 or 20? I'm curious about that.
Yeah, let's all do math again, shall we? I move we table and put it back to committee. No.
Don't even say that.
Yeah.
Chair's not recognizing you right now?
I don't know. Where do you draw the line on that? You know, I mean, it's kind of one of those things where if you have... You know, if it's because you've got a 5,000-square-foot lot that's not going to get a house, I imagine you're probably not going to get too much comments about that. If all of a sudden you're putting something in on a 2,000-square-foot lot that's next door to Paul, you may not be very happy. You know, do you know what I'm saying? There's a balance to be struck there. Maybe that's where the next step might be lot size averaging or something like that, where you can take all the lots that you would be able to get, even with the 10%, and then average them out over the entire development. You know, I mean, I don't know. Again, professional knows what would work the best for Ferndale. Let's let them do it.
That means nothing to help.
Except for fees.
Except for fees.
Any other questions?
Except for fees
guest?
And taxes.
Okay, seeing no questions. Thank you. Thank you. Next, I have Robin Peters, but I think she was going to talk about the Arts Commission. Mike Hess, Westlake Sandwich. Welcome, Mr. Hess.
Thank you. My name is Mike Hess. I am at 717 Westlake Sandwich Drive, Bellingham, and I'm here on behalf of Interfaith Coalition. I'm also a big affordable housing advocate. Presently, we have nearly 400 homeless families in Whatcom County. That's a big problem. And anyone that's followed real estate prices over the last 20 or 25 years has seen those grow and grow and grow, which just makes that homeless problem worse. Affordable housing has to start with affordable real estate. I support this change because it makes more efficient use of not only our city services, but of available building lots. And that's a big win for affordable housing.
Questions? Thanks. For this, Councilperson Watson?
Oh, Mr. West, does this mean if staff approves, or if we approve this, does this mean that you can do the triplex for the transitional housing? Will this give you the space to do the triplex? I know there was some discussion about whether or not you had a lot size.
That's what we've been told, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for speaking. Great program. If you haven't heard about Our House right here in Ferndale, ask somebody and find out. It's a great project and another great example of how people could contribute to help our community. So anyone else in the audience would like to speak on this subject? Anyone else? Okay. So, Council, I'll close the public hearing and wait for decision from Council. Councilperson Goodrich.
I make a motion that we accept, trying to get to the top of the page here.
1305-003.
I'll second that.
Okay, been moved and seconded. Further discussion, Councilperson Mutchler?
I like this a lot, and I appreciate your doing it. And something that hasn't been considered or brought up is the city has an extra lot they could set, it gets property tax from. I think it makes things more affordable for builders. They can get three instead of two and whatever else. This is just a win-win.
I'd like to offer an amendment that I think was referred to by Perry earlier, that difference be averaged, could be averaged by the builder among all the lots.
It's already in there.
Is that in there?
It's already in there.
The city may also consider averaging this 10% lot size reduction with all or a portion of the other lots within a subdivision, utilizing this flexibility so that lots are similar in size.
It was covered.
Yeah, couldn't the is that something the developer can do in a zone? Is it need approval from the city to do that?
We may consider approving that average.
Administrative flexibility.
I withdraw that. Thank you.
Okay. Any further discussion from council? Seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries 7-0. Good job, council. Right now, I'm gonna do an adjournment until we'll do 5 minutes. We'll get the students out of here. I know the next subject will probably go beyond 8 o'clock in terms of discussion. So, in the interest of, I know the students want to get out and do their studying on such a nice, beautiful evening. I know they're all going to rush home and do their homework.
Go pick the trash.
So let's all sign your papers so you can go do your homework. Okay, we're back in session. The next item on the agenda is the border gas tax ballot measure. Staff did not present a report on this. You did?
I thought we were
not going to do that since we've presented it several times.
There's something in here.
Just really briefly, if I could tell them where we left off in November. And that I'll leave it at that. The report is lengthy. It's the third time the same report's been in the packet. But in November, basically, where we left off was that the council appeared poised to send this to the ballot, but the question was, what ballot? And there were concerns over the costs of a special election in April or May. So the council moved to basically bring it back at this time this year to discuss whether or not to put it on an August or November ballot. And I leave it to you.
Okay, I didn't think we were going to have a staff report, but thank you to our clerk for bringing that up. I was going to refer to council, who has requested they have their own report. So, Councilperson Olson?
All right, just more or less my view. I'm one of seven. What we'll consider tonight is putting the idea of a gas tax before the city of Ferndale voters and letting the voters decide if they want to pass this tax. This is not the council passing a new tax on gas station owners, as some of the wealthiest oil business owners in the county are trying to frame this discussion. The voters will decide, not us. The gas station owners' letters to the council are almost identical in wording, claiming they will not survive a 1 cent increase they say they'll absorb. That's yet to be seen if it'll come true, but they pass on other associated costs, such as cash or credit, with credit users paying an extra 10 cents or more a gallon. So based on that fact, we'll just have to wait and see if history repeats itself. The gas tax, unlike a property tax, will be paid by everyone who buys gas within the city limits of Ferndale. That will include thousands of Canadian drivers, thousands of Canadian semi-truck drivers at the pilot truck stop, and tourists alongside city residents. What better way to fix our roads than by people who use them even when they don't live here? It shares the burden. The funds raised from this gas tax are sorely needed to finance our crumbling infrastructure here in Ferndale. If you hate the evening Main Street rush hour mess, then this could help alleviate that. If you're sick of the traffic lights on Main Street that can't be synchronized because they're too old hand-me-downs from Bellingham, then help us fix the problem so we can buy new state-of-the-art equipment, not somebody else's old surplus. These gas tax funds will not be used for developers to build new roads. They'll be used to fund the much-needed improvements of our existing streets. At all of our community meetings, the voters have asked to vote for taxes. Here's a chance to let them do that. Vote the gas tax up or down. The voters at this meeting have also asked for road improvements. Here's a chance for them to fulfill that request by voting on a gas tax to pay for these road repairs. The gas tax will be paid by purchases of gasoline by everyone, not just property owners, who bear the brunt of taxation in this city. Business owners, including gas station owners in Ferndale, do not pay a business and occupation tax on the profits as they do in most cities. So they already receive a tax break in Ferndale. A 1 cent per gallon will not send them to the poorhouse, I can assure you. We have cut the budget repeatedly and eliminated countless employees and needed expenses in order to balance our budget. There's nothing left to cut. Until the economy improves, we're left to try and raise funds wherever we can. Here's a chance to let the voters have their say in a tax. And if it doesn't pass, and at the next community meeting when somebody discusses the lack of road repairs, we can say the voters have spoken and declined to fix them. I'm betting that's not going to happen. I purchase my fuel in Ferndale, and on the average, fill up once a week at 20 gallons. That's 20 cents a week times 52 weeks. That comes to $10.40 a year. Even retired, I can afford to contribute $10.40 a year to help improve Ferndale roads.
Okay, can we have someone make a motion so we can kind of direct the discussion to that? So are you making a motion?
I'll make a motion that Agenda Bill 1305-004 be approved.
I'm sorry?
So that would put it into an August election. So do I have a second on that?
I thought we were going for November. Why would that put it into August?
Because that's how it's written.
That's how it's written. That's how it's written.
So that's your motion, is to do it for August?
Well,
it can be amended.
Yeah. All right. I'll amend it. Actually,
there hasn't been a second yet.
I will second the motion. Nope. Oh, wait. Okay. I take. Oh, my God. Don't look at me that way.
Wait, hold off. So, Council, you haven't. Let's assume you have not finished your motion. Your motion is as written or.
Oh,
no, I didn't say as written. Okay. So I would like to amend it from August, which I'm not sure if we're going to have a primary. That could raise the cost of it to November when I know we're going to have, and that will keep our cost down.
Okay. Now, do we have a second to further discussion?
I'm afraid to second. I don't want to get yelled at.
You can second now, and no one will hit you.
You sure?
Yes.
I will second.
Okay. Councilperson Goodrich.
I have a question to our station owners in regards to one of the statements that was made in Council Member Olson's thing here about the truck traffic at Pilot. I noticed that they have on their board there, it says, I think, DEF, and their price per gallon is like $2.60 or something versus the $3 and some cents. Do they not pay taxes, do you know?
So are you asking we want to bring someone up?
I would like one of our owners, because that's a question that I've had, and then Councilmember Olson's assuming that we would get tax from the truck stop, and if they're not paying taxes.
So before we go on, Council, do we want to open this the floor up to the public? I think we should.
I do, sure if we have somebody from Pilot that can address a Pilot question. We can answer that because we've already gone into it, and he's already discussed it. So apparently, if you weren't here, you weren't listening.
I did not.
Okay, so let's throw it to our clerk who said he's researched and he hasn't answered that question. So
I contacted Pilot directly about this because there was a previous question from Council, and I can basically read the email from Lance Champion from Pilot Travel Centers. What he basically said is, for commercial fuel sales, a semi-truck typically fuels 105 gallons per transaction. Therefore, the unit price per transaction is lower than a diesel pickup truck, which is about maxed out at 40 gallons. We have less profit margin on commercial fuel than we do retail fuel because we sell more volume per transaction. The price difference you see on the truck side is due simply to this. Our contract pricing is not advertised, and it's based on millions of gallons per year sales under contract with individual businesses. So they have contract pricing, but the public pricing you see is based on full sales.
So that DEF is a contract price.
I don't believe that's their contract price. That's their bulk 105 gallons per transaction as opposed to 40 gallons per transaction.
So because
they're tax exempt, that's what you're saying.
Okay. It's not tax exempt.
Hands up before we just all
Pilot
comment.
Pilot was very adamant about that.
Okay. Nice.
Okay, does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay, Councilperson Watson?
I guess that's right. It's moot. I got my answer.
Okay. Councilperson Mutchler?
So sometime we would want to hear from...
Yeah, we will. Yeah. We will. Sure. Okay. I checked again. I mean, obviously the legislature is... I know we talked about this committee. It is still on the docket for a state to consider a 10 cents per gallon. That is not... It hasn't been approved. It didn't move forward. But it's still... It is not what they'd call Olympia a dead issue right now. You know, they're coming back, so... We had that question in committee. I wanted to bring it back. I wanted to check again today where it's sitting. I talked to Doug Erickson's office, and I couldn't get it's still going to be discussed, Gary. Obviously at this point they can't tell you whether it's going to move forward or not, but it's still an issue that's on the docket. Councilperson Watson?
So were they still talking about it? I know that council could raise... The fee tab.
Part of that, it's interesting for the public is to know if you study that bill, is that it's interesting is part of that bill is a 10 cents per gallon added tax to gas to go to road projects from the state, that old giant term, road projects in the state. The interesting addendum to that that the public really should know is that it also would give cities the ability to add up to, I'm not going to say that amount, the proposal was, but that never went through, up to $40 per license car tab in their city. So we'd look at license car tabs within their city, and if it went forward as proposed, a city could add up to $40 for your license tabs
without
in addition
vote.
To this, without a vote of the people. A council would vote that in. So kind of an interesting one. Really hasn't made the public yet because they haven't publicized it, because that would be an interesting, debatable issue.
I'm just curious, with the 10% raise, would they, there's no
10 cents
per gallon raise, that's no guarantee that Whatcom County or we would get more money, correct? I mean, they're saying statewide they would raise it up.
Yeah, we're all
reach Seattle, Tacoma.
Yeah,
that's what I mean.
We've always been known as a donor county.
Loaded,
right. There's no debate about that. I know, a couple years ago when I brought you the charts, Whatcom County is a donor county.
Because I've heard people say.
What I'm saying for the public to understand that is that our the amount of gas tax that we produce in Whatcom County does not come back and equal to dollar to dollar. That's common knowledge. So I think it's probably appropriate. Let's open the public. So I'm going to go with just hands up. We're like to speak. So you were the first one, so you get to come back.
He's waited an hour and a half now. So.
Welcome, Mr. McAvoy.
Thank you. I apologize.
No problem at all. You're
kind of a rookie at this thing, so you have to bear with me. Again, Tim McAvoy, 2535 Eldridge Avenue, Bellingham, Washington. And Mayor Jensen's correct. I think there's 39 counties in the state of Washington, and Whatcom County is 39th in terms of the amount of revenue it collects versus what it receives from the state. So, you know, I think that would be a good opportunity possibly, and I know it's a big mountain to climb, but in terms of trying to get maybe our fair share of the revenue that's generated by the gas tax that's already in place. And, yes, there's a proposal of a potential 10% increase in the gas tax, 2 cents a year over 5 years.
10 cents, isn't it?
10 cents, yeah. 10 cents. What did I say?
10%.
I'm sorry, 10 cents. 2 cents per gallon for 5 years. And just a little side note, I might be wrong on this, but DEF, that it may be another product, maybe diesel exhaust fluid that was given that. Would you say $2?
Yeah, it was like $2.60.
Yeah, my guess is it was another product, that it was a diesel exhaust fluid. But anyway, I can certainly understand in these times the idea of looking for revenue that might be easily found. There's two reasons why I oppose this measure. And one is that I think even though the letter of the law allows Ferndale to do this, I think the spirit of the law was for those stations that sat right on the border. Certainly as I'm a wholesaler of fuel, and so I see the impact of I love the Canadians, believe me, I think Whatcom County would be a much different economically right now without our Canadian neighbors. But I think that the real impacts, as I see the volume of increase in fuel in the different communities, certainly the Point Roberts, the Blaine, and the St. Mass are ones that are much more proportionally heavily impacted. I would say the impact percentage-wise of Ferndale or Bellingham or maybe even Burlington is not like that. And the second reason, although I know it doesn't sound like a penny is a lot, but and I know everybody thinks oil is, you know, rich, 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 money, money, money. It's really a penny game, and especially for the dealer out there that work on oftentimes very thin margins, and a penny does make a difference. And the reality is this will not be a penny that will be easy to pass on. Some things are easy to pass on, but the penny won't be because, you know, for the most part, the street drives the pricing. And a lot of the pricing that Ferndale has is influenced by Bellingham, influenced by things up north. So, anyway, those are my two comments.
Questions for this guest? Councilperson Ingram?
Well, I hear that a lot. You can't pass this on. And I find that patently offensive. How dare you tell me you can't pass that on when the price of gasoline can fluctuate by 10 to 15 cents a gallon per week?
We'll chill it down a couple.
Because, I mean, it does. Mm-hmm. I buy gas in Ferndale. And the station I buy gas at went up 15 cents in the last week.
Yeah.
For no explained reason, it just went up.
Yeah.
Will it come down?
No.
Maybe.
Well, not
probably
in the near
not.
Future because you're having problems out at the Conoco refinery. You know, we live in a crazy world. You can anticipate. In fact, when you go home tonight, you might want to fill up again because the price, I guarantee, over the next week is going to, because of market dynamics, reformers down in at the Conoco refinery, and so there's going to
conveniently just in time for the summer driving season.
Yeah, I know, but it
you know it happens every year.
Yeah, well, there's always disruption.
And I buy gas.
Yeah.
Locally, to support the local economy.
Yeah.
I don't go to Costco. Mm-hmm. And I walk in to fill up my pickup truck, and I go in and I drop $80 on the counter, and I get 10 cents a gallon off. Mm-hmm. How can I get 10 cents a gallon off if a penny's going to kill you?
Well,
I've never had that explained to me in a way that I can really feel comfortable
okay,
let's
give, if you don't want to answer or someone else wants to think about answering that.
Yeah, I guess I'm not exactly sure. Obviously, there are programs in place by some of the oil companies that are funded by the oil companies themselves. I'm talking about the local dealer. The local dealer isn't bearing the cost of that 10 cents off per gallon.
But there's a credit
grocery
card.
Store.
The credit cards charge you for every transaction.
Right.
So if you don't make them pay the credit card transaction fee, they're giving you part of that back. Because there is a credit card transaction fee that you have to pay for the convenience, your
yeah.
convenience, the station.
Yeah, roughly
because,
two, because 2.5%.
Because if I use my credit card that's issued to me by the gas company, I get the same 10 cents a gallon off.
It's issued by the gas
company. Yeah, because the gas company doesn't charge a fee.
Yes.
So a gas company card doesn't have a fee, where a Visa MasterCard usually has a 2.5%
fee. But it's still
fee.
10 cents a gallon.
Yes, there's a 10 cent per gallon charge that the business owner incurs if you use a Visa or MasterCard that they do not incur if you use a Shell or Chevron card or a proprietary card. Because the company doesn't. All the processing of credit cards go through the oil company. They're all processed through the oil company and a brand.
Any more questions for Mr. McAvoy? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you for being patient with us. Anyone else from the audience? Mr. Estridge? Welcome again, sir.
Thanks. This time I'm not here as a realtor. I'm just here as Perry Estridge, citizen on Church Road. I went through the past few years of your guys' minutes because I'm sitting there talking to the wife about what's been going on recently and property taxes and all this sort of stuff. And I was really kind of interested to see what's been going on. I haven't been following it that closely, but I thought, I'm going to go through the minutes. And I'm going to look at tax and fee increases. And on average, it's about 3 a year from you guys. I've got bonds for police, solid waste tax, stormwater fees. In 2010, there's $5 million more in council-matic bonds. I don't know what that did to my property taxes, but money's not free. The water fees went up, 0.5%, utility fee increase. Then you get into 2011, stormwater utility fees, water and sewer bonding. This was proposed one time. I think that was the second time it had come up. Then we got the transportation benefit district. Then last year we ended up with a 3% property tax, solid waste tax. It just keeps coming and coming and coming. And I want to tell you, every time it's in the minutes, y'all are saying, well, it's just another buck. It's just another dollar. It's just another $20 this year. The library is just going to cost me another $11 this year. And I'm telling you, it's getting to add up to some real money. I went to the Ferndale website today and the Ferndale School District. They said, hey, we're going to run a bond. Let us know when you want us to run our bond. How about never? And this is where it goes. Remember the library? We just voted on it. I think this is the first meeting since the library tax. Hey, let's let the voters vote again. And this is what I want to get to. I told you all back about a year ago when we were talking about these things, people out there are making really tough decisions. They're making tough decisions, okay? My clients come to me in my law office, and if they are $5 short on their mortgage payment, guess what? It goes to foreclosure. It's a buck. It's only a dollar. It's another latte. My clients haven't bought lattes for about 2-3 years. Okay? And you say, well, it's offensive. They can't pass it on to me. It's offensive that they would think about passing it on to me because I can't afford it anymore. My law office this year, I thought I was just going to be paying one
you know, 1.5% B&O, because that was the temporary tax that the legislature put on 2 years ago, got a new governor who said he's not going to raise fees. No. The proposal now is my B&O is going to go up to 1.08%. That's the temporary, you know, tax that was supposed to sunset in June this year. Well, here's where it's coming down to. My wife and I decided we were going to do some good for the community. We went down to the veterans' home down here, and we hired an unemployed homeless vet to start doing work around our house. And let me tell you, the library at $11, gas tax at $20 a year, I'm paying this vet $10 an hour, $11 an hour to help me out around my house. And it's really seriously getting to the point where I'm going to have to start making a decision where if people come to me looking for work, I'm going to tell them, no, you need to go to the Ferndale City Council because they're the ones with all the money. They're the ones that are passing this on for you. I can live with my lights not working and hiring a vet to do work around my house. What I can't do is you take more and more money out of my paycheck and telling me it's for my benefit. Okay? I'm trying to keep it calm into 3 minutes. But, you know,
you've been extended by two.
We're just about there. I told Council Member Watson, I'm not singling you out, you've got to start making the tough choices. You can't hide behind the voters and say, let the voters decide if they're going to do this. Sometimes you have to be careful. My parents didn't let me answer every question they posed to me. Sometimes they did it because it was for my own good, and I probably might not make the right decision. You need to start making decisions, and you need to start thinking about the priorities and whether or not the voters voted in and what that looks like for the rest of the citizens that are out there trying to make that happen. Okay? Take a look at Bellingham, the municipal park district. We kept telling them, well, it's only 25 cents per thousand evaluation, and it passed. People voted for it. What did it mean? It meant property taxes. I met one guy, his property tax on his affordable housing out there, $80,000 a year. 80 grand. No more affordable housing for him. He's not providing it. You've got to be careful about the questions you ask the voters because, okay, you can hide behind the answer, but you may not like ultimately the answer you're going to get. Just think about that.
So you don't want to. You can't run away.
Okay. I'm not running.
No. Okay.
If you want to talk about it, I'm here.
He has time with 3 seconds to spare, so we compliment
him. I guess I'm just curious. I mean, you don't want us to go to the voters just because you don't want to pay the tax, or you don't want us to ask the voters? Because we can in a heartbeat right here raise everybody's fee $20 per
sure.
tab.
Yeah.
You really
and,
rather
and,
pay
you
$20
know,
more than $10 more in.
Well, you can't. You can't now.
Oh.
You can't raise car tabs now.
Not tonight.
You could raise car tabs 20%. You could raise my property fee, my property taxes 3%. I mean, I don't know what your bank capacity is. I mean,
I'm not talking about that. I guess.
No, I mean, no. That's the point, though, is that yes, this is where the power resides. Okay, mm-hmm. I have my money. And I'm trying to do good with it out in the community
I would like us to have a chance to speak for a moment. The biggest problem we're having is everything's more expensive for you. Everything's more expensive for us, too. We have to pay the gas. We've got police cars rolling around 24/7. Gas costs more. Our medical insurance has gone through the roof. It's double digits every year, 4 or 5 years? So I know we're asking for more money, and the reason we're asking for transportation money is that we can't get money from the feds or the state, and we definitely can't get it without matching grants. And that's what our Public Works Director, Ms. Marlega, has been able to take the $300,000 TBD, and she's parlayed that into, almost $1 million? How much for Vista and Thornton?
$1.3 million.
But if we didn't have that $300,000 from the TBD, we would not be fixing Vista and Thornton. And that's why we went to the people, and that's why we're asking for another $50,000, because we've got roads that if we could just chip seal them every year, we wouldn't have to keep replacing them, but we don't have the money to even chip seal. Ms. Marlega was able to get a deal with the county this year, which is amazing. One of our roads is going to get chip sealed because the county's just going to go an extra couple miles. But I know it's hard to – I'm frustrated, too, that we have to come down to $10,000 or $15,000, but we really are desperate for money, too. And you heard the school district, they're not going to have track meets. They're not going to fix the track. It's not even on their radar to fix the track. They're just not going to have track meets anymore. Our kids are not going to have a track. It just boggles the mind. And I know the hard part is people don't make money like they used to. Good-paying jobs are not around like they used to. And for me, I grew up in Detroit, and everybody made good money. You know, you graduated from high school, you went to work for Ford, you could buy a nice house, you could send your kids to college, they could go to work for you, but those jobs are gone. So I understand people are making less money. But it still costs as much to run the city as it ever has. In fact, it costs more to run the city than it ever has. So, I mean, there are no good answers here. We have to raise a certain amount of money to, you know, maintain our infrastructure. We don't have enough money to maintain our infrastructure, and we have to have the matching grant money. Ms. Marlega goes out and she begs for money. You know, King County gets all the transportation money. But she's been able to go out and say, but look, we've got $300,000, and next year we'll get another $300,000. And that's how she got the grant. She turned $300,000 into $1.3 million, and that's the only reason Thornton and Vista are going to be fixed. So I really do understand your frustration and our frustration, too. I mean, we're trying to take care of 12,000 people. We're basically running a large nonprofit here. Our job is to take care of 12,000 people, give them roads and water and sewer, and do it at the lowest price we possibly can. And it's hard. And well, I don't like having to raise this. I don't even like to ask for the extra penny, but we've got roads that have to be chip sealed, and we have got to start doing it every few years, or we're going to spend, you can either spend $50,000 a year chip sealing, or you can wait 5 years and spend $1 million to fix the roads. So I wish there were easier answers.
Well, I wish there was too, and to sort of respond to that, the track thing, I was kind of interested because the students are finally figuring out that that track was condemned. Back when the bond failed two times in a row, remember that? I mean, I grew up in a family of teachers. Bonds don't fail. To have one fail in a city like Ferndale, where we've got schools of excellence from, you know, decades ago and all this sort of thing, it boggled my mind. So I started attending the school district meetings. The track had failed back when that bond failed. And at the same time, the school district is building Cascadia, which, and I will quote this, the architect told me that those rooms were oriented to take advantage of the views of Mount Baker. My mom will tell you the first thing she did as a teacher was make sure all the kids' backs were to the windows. You know, I went to a school that the windows looked out on parking lots because there's nothing interesting going on out there. You might as well face the teacher. What I'm saying is that there are choices that come up every single day, and I expect you to be making those choices. But when you start seeing other things, you know, and just the discussion we had, if it comes to a choice between parks or fixing roads, I can tell you where my priorities are going to lie. I'd rather see the roads fixed. I mean, obviously, this hasn't walked on a track in quite some time. But anyway, but those are the tough decisions that we need to make. But at the same time, I just see requests for more and more and more money. And I'm telling you, the people are getting to a point where dollars matter. Dollars matter. I see it every single day. And, you know, careful when you're going out there, because I had this conversation with Kelly Linville a few weeks ago. She says, oh, my God, you know, they just packed the Parks District. There was something, oh, the Bellingham housing levy. And she says, I'm afraid that if I go ask for a tax increase on something that the city really needs, the will of the voters might not be there anymore. And then I'm going to be stuck. We've got affordable housing and a nice park, but now I don't have the ability to go get something else. And that's what I'm saying is you don't know where that will lies. You don't know where the magic breaking point is. And that's why I really think it's going to behoove you to be paying really close attention to that and making some of those really tough choices. I wish we had all the money in the world for parks. I wish we had all the money in the world for libraries. But the reality of it is we have to make tough choices every single day, and sometimes the money just isn't there and it's not coming, so you have to learn to live with the dirt road.
Okay, in the interest of moving on, would any more of you like to have questions of Mr. Eskridge? Or,
well, I don't think she got the answer to hers. Who's he mad at? The people who vote for it or us for wanting to let them vote for it?
I think both.
Okay.
I'll do both.
I think both. Are you standing up? Would you like to come forward and speak?
Okay. Wasn't sure if it was stretching or coming.
He did it in a usual way.
I haven't done the.
Usually we get the handle, but this stood up and he's talking.
Thought he was trying to escape from it.
Thank you, Robert Nordhaus, 6944 Dahlberg Road in Ferndale. I think I want a clarification. Are you asking for this to be a motion to go towards the voters?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Go to the voters.
Okay. And is it going to benefit Ferndale specifically?
Yes.
Okay.
Only Ferndale.
Okay. As a consumer, that's where I like to see my dollars go. If I see something that's going specifically for a certain spot, then I'm for that. I also like to see that if my money goes to a certain spot, I see evidence that that is being used and improved. And I think this is, as a consumer, I think this is a good thing. I'm perfectly happy with spending a little bit of extra money, and I especially like the idea that this is for everyone rather than a property tax owner or a property owner that this money is going to have to be shouldered on. So I think, as a consumer, I just want to say that I think this is a good thing, and I'm always think it's a good thing to allow the people to decide rather than say, no, this is what we're going to do, and you're just going to like it. I think this is something that the people need to agree on. And one thing, too, that I have to ask, too, is, you know, it's a penny here, it's a penny there. As a consumer, I am getting tired of being taxed for this, that, this, that. But I also know that the reason why you do a penny here and a penny there is because you guys are gun-shy. You ask for 2 cents, and someone's going to yell at you because it's too much. You ask for 1 cent, you think it's going to pass. 6 months later, you go, we really should have asked for two.
I think we can only ask for one, though.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. I thought you wanted a clarification, because we really can just ask for one.
If you just ask for one, then that's great. My point actually was, if you can ask for two, if that works, then
we're
do
ask
it.
We were going to ask for $5, but...
Yeah, that ain't going to work. That's... Everyone's kind of getting beaten up, but I also hear people, they complain that the roads... suck. And then they complain that the roads need to be fixed. And then they complain that it needs to be this. But then they complain that they don't want to pay for it. Well, at some point, you just got to do it. So I, as a consumer, agree.
Stay there. I think we have questions of this guest. Councilperson Olson, you had your hand
up? Not actually a question. What you brought up is you like to see what your money is doing. And Janice has started a new program with the TPD money. If you drive Vista, you see the big sign that your TPD money is paying for all this work on Vista. Mm-hmm. So there will be things like that around the city where this money is actually being applied only in the city.
Right. And I have to commend the people that have been working on this, being new into this environment. This town is run by an amazing group of people that do a lot of volunteer work and a lot of work on outside their time. And... it's not something that is done lightly from a lot of people from my appearance. So asking for money is not something that anyone likes to do, but sometimes it's necessary. As a business owner, I know that the buck is being made by the manufacturers and the people that are billing you and me, not the city or myself. So that's my 2 cents.
Any further questions for this guest? Seeing none, thank you. Okay, we had one more there, and we'll still have more. So, Mr. Bell, you had indicated.
Sure.
Welcome again.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, Council. Kathy, I'd like to answer your question regarding the money, and you'd asked Mr. McAvoy and so forth.
Mm-hmm. And what? Just a sec, Bob, I get for the recorded record.
Bob Bell,
thank you.
2085 Main Street.
Thank you.
Owned Ferndale Mini Market. One of the reasons that I've been on a campaign to hold fees in line and reduce some fees and so on and so forth is that the reason that you have the money problems you have is because I believe we're turning away business that would come to the community. And when you put a fee on something, an example, impact fees and so on and so forth, I'm a little off topic here, but I think you'll get my point. And that business doesn't come here because of those fees. Now you've lost his tax revenue forever. So not only have you lost a fee, but you lost that revenue forever. And I think you have to look, and that's why I keep going back to this business thing. The business community generates the revenue. And if fees are too high, they're just not going to go out there and invest the money in the community. And example after example, I know there's at least a half a dozen retail businesses that have wanted to come into this community and can't come in because there's not retail space available, or they're not willing to invest the money in a building and so on and forth to come into town. Whether it be a restaurant that was talking about, I think Mr. Mayor knows about that, and I think there was a bakery that I was going to try to bring in at one time. Fees made it unreasonable. Didn't make us available. It didn't allow us to do it. And so I think you need to look at that, and I think that I'll jump over to the tax, okay? But, I mean, I think you have to realize that by bringing the businesses into the community, not only will it help generate revenue, but it also, these small independent businesses get involved in the community. And we're lacking that. Our downtown hasn't had development in how many years? And why is that? Because people can't afford to develop there. Why is that? Because it's in a floodplain, because fees are too high. And why I'm on a campaign to reduce fees is to get businesses
to
come in.
We're talking about the gas tax.
I think he's going to get to that in about 2 seconds.
I am. I'm right there. So, anyway, one of the things that's happened, I've been here 36 years in gasoline, and when I invested the money in that station there in town here, it was a good business to invest in. And it's been good to me over the years. However, the last 10 years has not been. And the reason for that is that when we had the merger of the major oil companies, the oil companies dramatically changed. And so now, for example, Costco selling their gas at the price they saw was way below what we pay for the gas. So we can't compete with that. We have no choice. We can't compete with it. So our volumes have decreased, and I would say you could ask anyone to mix up the new pilot in town. You know, he's obviously a corporate, and he's obviously getting, you know, buying gasoline nationally. Therefore, he has contracts where he can afford to sell it what he sells it for.
Go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead.
2 minutes. Thanks. So that's why we have what we're trying to do. So in the last 10 years, our volumes have been decreasing. So we've lost 40-50% of our volume of gasoline sales in the last 10 years. And yet we've tried to do everything we can to stop that, to reverse that. But we can't, because the corporate gas stations continue to hammer us. And face it, people are going there. Go to Costco. We've got people lined up for hours to buy gasoline. And what we're trying to do, we're trying to give discounts, cash discount that you were talking about, or the 15-cent increase we just saw in the price of gasoline. My wholesale price goes up or down daily, okay? So we daily watch not only our wholesale price, but we watch our competition price. And we feel we have to try to compete with at least the same brand of stations in Bellingham we do here in Ferndale. But the larger the city, the more volume there is available to them. And so we're a declining business. And so we have a group of 10 stations here that are marginal at best. You can ask any one of the nine. There's the pilot's a different situation. But you can ask them, would they build a station tomorrow? They would say no. And it's like that cent a gallon is costing us three times what our property tax costs us. And if we fight for every penny, we get that price as low as we can get it. And we have customers that come in and swear at us because they say our price is, what are we doing? It's not us. It's the oil companies. And they're the ones making the money. You look at their bottom lines. They're triple what they, you know, they're billions and billions of dollars. And they no longer care about the little guy because they've got the big guys now. So you've got 10 businesses that are struggling at best.
6 seconds.
Yeah. And you have Ferndale. I mean, you have Blaine, Linden, Sumas. They've closed a lot of stations there.
I don't believe Linden has the tax, though.
No.
Linden doesn't have the tax.
No. But it's been affected by the what's happening in the other communities and
okay.
So on.
Okay. Questions for this guest? Yes? Councilperson Ingram and Councilperson Mutchler.
Is it permissible to inform Mr. Bell about what our ordinance might be structured along the lines of if the voters do approve it?
It's conjecture.
It's conjecture right now, Bob.
Rooms, they can say whatever you want.
What the proposal is from staff is that we exempt the first 25,000 gallons you pump. Mm-hmm. And it may go to 50,000 because both of those figures have been discussed in committees.
Mm-hmm.
So you may end up being totally exempt from it anyway. What do you pump them on?
It varies. It depends upon what's happening in the marketplace. But if we're
just give you know, a ballpark average. I mean,
50,000, 60,000, maybe.
Well, okay.
Maybe 40,000.
So if the first 50,000 is exempt, you could be home free.
Yeah, but see, I'm not doing that just for me. I'm retirement age. I'm not going to be here.
Who else is pumping more than you? Besides pilot.
Pacific, probably the ARCO stations are.
Maybe, but ARCO's not in our city limits.
I see.
The one at Grandview is.
But you have ten businesses here that...
We're trying... The way that we're,
you don't want to put them out of business.
If the voters pass this tax, mm-hmm. we're trying to write the ordinance to protect the little guys,
mm-hmm.
not to hurt them.
Mm-hmm.
We're after the pilots of the world, mm-hmm. not the Bob Bells.
So, I guess the ordinance has a right to $50,000. He's kind of told you could go to
$100,000.
No ordinance has been written.
Yeah, no ordinance has been written.
There was a brief discussion about potential exemption.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we're not making any promises.
Small business.
But it doesn't really seem to matter. You mentioned the fees and stuff. How much have we reduced our development fees in downtown? Effectually, zero.
Yes.
Yes. No. And nothing's happening. Where's all the businesses coming from, Bob? We've reduced our fees to zero?
We don't have a B&O tax.
And we don't have a B&O tax, and yet all these businesses still don't seem to want to come to Ferndale. Okay. I don't understand.
Well, I have a piece of property. Let me explain to you then. We're getting into it here. I have a piece of property that's 15,000 square feet between Central School and the old police department. For me to walk out with a permit, it's over $70,000 to build two fourplexes. So tell me there's no fees.
Is that TIF stuff?
That is the impact fees. I don't have the numbers, but there would still be impact fees downtown.
Yeah. They went from $120,000 down to about $70,000. I still decided not to build it because it's marginal.
Okay. Councilperson Lechler?
Wow.
Nice
I know.
See you,
Mr. Bell. It's a passionate thing. It is.
Yeah, I was trying to understand no impact fees downtown. I don't remember that happening. And also... This council can't promise what the next council might do in terms of exempting X many gallons. So if I was a gas station owner, I would assume that every single gallon is going to be taxed.
Yeah.
Maybe not, but I would assume that. My question, Mr. Bell, is kind of a straightforward one. Who's going to pay this penny?
Each one of the stations are paying the penny.
Because I think council thinks, I've had those thoughts, that we're all just going to, it's $4 a gallon, I'll pay $4.01, big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that what's going to happen? We'll just pay an extra penny?
Why not?
How does that work?
How it works is we've lost 40-50% of our volume in the last 10 years. It continues. My volumes today are less than they were a year ago. And I was under, and you had road construction going on. So every penny I have to increase there, I slow my volume. So I can't give out that extra penny because I have to stay down to try to maintain the volumes, and we're losing it. So I'm actually having to give back money in the form of 10 cents off a gallon if you use a Shell credit card instead of a regular credit card, because that's a fee I don't have to pay. We're working with programs to try to come up with some discounts that we can give people that to try to get that volume back.
So you're saying, like, for every penny or whatever the amount mm-hmm. goes up, somebody drops off your customer
That's
base.
Right, exactly.
I mean, you don't know where it's at, but...
Yeah.
Whatever movement upward, somebody moves.
That's
somebody's.
Right. That's right.
Well,
and it's not an exact science. I mean, granted, and I guess in your mind you can think, but trust me, we're selling the gas as cheaply as we possibly can to try to maintain that volume. It's not happening. We're not doing it. We're sinking.
Okay, Councilperson Olson.
Two things. First, we need to correct your statement. You're speaking for your station. You're not speaking for all 10 stations, correct?
No, I'm speaking for. We've had conversations. We've had meetings. I'm talking
How
about all
the stations.
How do you
represent 10 stations? You own one station in town?
That's right.
Okay. Then I don't see. Did you have something that says you're speaking for all of them? Did they sign anything? For you to sit here and say that's like
wait a
I
minute.
Speak for the entire council. I don't.
No, no. I do because you received letters and you said those letters were all the same. The reason.
Two.
Well, but the reason they were is those letters were sent out in agreement that that's what we needed to say.
So do you have like a regular meeting schedule or you meet together?
We've met. Yes, we have met. We don't have one scheduled tomorrow sort of a thing, but when the gas tax comes up, we get together, we have meetings, we talk about it. I can tell you. And have you talked to any of the other station operators?
They haven't talked to me, no.
No, have you maybe gone out and asked them what impact this tax would have on them?
No.
Do you think that would be a reasonable thing to do?
I think if they don't like it, it'd be reasonable for them to come and talk to me, as they have to others in the room.
Yeah, but you know something? I come to you, I speak to you, I tell you what our concerns are. As my representative in this city, I'd like you to come out and talk to us.
Did you say that in your letter?
I'm saying it right now.
Okay, well now we can make a thing, but it wasn't in your letter, so don't try and frame it as I'm not doing something because you didn't ask me to.
Well, let's watch how that goes.
Yeah.
And the second thing is, what was it, 2009? The gas study that was done by the Attorney General's office mm-hmm. came to the conclusion: uh-huh. Whatcom County dealers enjoy a higher profit margin.
Mm-hmm.
How do you get away from that?
We do per gallon. We do. And I explained that in my letter. And what happens is if you pump 75,000 gallons in Whatcom County and you pump 150,000 gallons in Seattle, you will make the same gross profit because Seattle's prices tend to be 5 to 10 cents a gallon less than ours. But they can afford to do that because they're pumping 150,000 gallons. We can't. So if you were to take that study that the Attorney General did, and he was asked specifically about Whatcom County, if you go over to take that same question and go to Port Townsend, you'll find the same thing as that's happening in Bellingham. You go to Kelso Longview, you'll find the same thing they found in Whatcom County. Their prices are higher. Their margins are higher, but their volumes are lower.
I own property in Kelso Longview,
okay.
mm-hmm. and theirs is cheaper than ours.
Right.
And they're a spot on the
mm-hmm.
freeway.
Mm-hmm.
Much larger than Whatcom County.
It's all volume-oriented.
Okay. any further questions for Mr. Bell?
No.
Councilperson Watson?
And I guess when I've talked, I haven't talked to the station owners. I've talked to other people that live in the city. And,
mm-hmm.
and I guess part of the problem is they don't understand either. It's like you're generally like sometimes 20 cents more than mm-hmm. some of the, like, you know, Pilot or some of them.
Mm-hmm.
So you're saying if you were 21 cents more, you'd lose a bunch more people, but being
enough more to where it wouldn't we couldn't afford to do that without losing that penny.
They'd all pay the penny.
I know, but you're already so expensive that people don't come to you. I mean, people don't come to you because you're really expensive. So.
Yes, but you realize why that is. We provide credit cards, all credit cards, and we pay credit card fees for those credit cards. Our wholesale price, we're a branded gas. So, therefore, we have the cleansers and the
so
different
because
things.
Because you have a contract with Shell.
That's correct.
So Shell is setting your price. Pilot has a contract with whomever they buy for the week?
Well, yes, and they buy spot price. So they're able to buy on a national contract. Mm-hmm. I mean, they sell millions and millions and millions of
but
gas.
But Shell is a national company, too.
But the difference is that's the problem. And you're understanding now what I'm talking about. We're small, independent businesses. We own our facilities. We go out and we contract with the oil company to do business. That, you know, we go to them, they come to us, we do business with them.
Are there still, like, what, Shell Corporation stations?
No, the oil companies completely sold out because they couldn't make money on the retail level. They decided that wasn't a profitable part of the business. So they basically sold most of their stations.
Okay.
Okay, so all your branded stations are now, for the most part, with exceptions, but for the most part, are independent dealers like myself.
Okay.
I guess for us, we're just in a situation where we're trying to raise some revenue.
Mm-hmm.
So this looks to us like a user fee.
Mm-hmm.
We have roads that are broken, so
mm-hmm.
people who use the road will pay gas. And
mm-hmm.
the more you use the road, the more gas you buy,
mm-hmm.
therefore the more tax you're paying, mm-hmm. basically.
And if it worked the way you're talking about, I would support it.
Okay.
It doesn't work that way. I'm not here trying to fib, or I'm not a greedy guy that's trying to make a bunch of money. I'm somebody that's been in business for 36 years in this community, and this is one of the worst things that's come down the road at us. Three times what property taxes. Think about it.
Okay, any more questions for Mr. Bell? We'll give the audience a thank you.
Thank you,
Mr. Bell.
Thank you for your time.
There's a motion on the floor, but is anyone else in the audience like to speak? Or okay, there is a motion on the floor. Councilperson Mutchler?
Yeah, I'm glad this has come back. And that we have had time to think about this. We voted on this 2.5 years ago, and I wrote down in my notes that in the affirmative to send this to the voters was Mutchler, Ingram, and Feria.
and voting no at the time was Zimmerman, Malpezzi, and Goodrich. 3-3 tie on our, I think it's the only time I've ever seen you break a tie. And you broke the tie, decided not to send it to the voters, and you got probably a nasty letter from me. I hope I wasn't unduly rude at the time. And I apologize. I apologize if it was.
So many, he can't keep track.
And I supported it because at the time, our streets were in great need. It was before we passed the transportation benefit district. And it just seemed like an easy way and a painless way to do it. I think there's a good chance the voters would approve this, looking at the history of some of the elections that we have. But I have some problems with it now. I want to just list of my concerns that I do have in case council wants to address them. First of all, the intent of the tax is to help with Canadian impact on the streets. What's kind of ironic about this is I think the greater Canadian impact is on the city of Bellingham, as I go down and count cars, which I have, and they're not qualified to enact this tax. They can't do this. I also think that Ferndale has unique disadvantages that Sumas and Blaine don't have. When you're in Sumas and Blaine, you have to travel 30 minutes to come to Bellingham to get gas. In Ferndale, we travel 10 minutes to get gas, and so these smaller gas stations are already at a significant disadvantage. I would think a tax like this would be okay if we could tax the entire county. If this is an entire county one-penny tax. But what we're doing is we're not leveling the playing field. We're putting Ferndale at another disadvantage. I also really question the thought that stations are making tons and tons of money. I tend to think that if a business is making a lot of money, we'd see more of those businesses. I can't remember the last gas station being built in Ferndale. I do recall one closing off of Portaway there. It seems to me that these are really profitable things, these independent. And I mean, the independent guys like Mr. Bell and others, we'd see more of them. In fact, it seems like they're closing. I also want to note that these stations do contribute. They are impacted by the TBD tax. They sell sodas and beers and windshield washer blades and things like that. I'm also concerned that this type of revenue source may be a diminishing revenue source because people are using less gas. I just bought a Prius. And so the state is trying to figure out what to do because people are using less and less gas. I also believe that Mr. Bell is correct, that it's the margins that make things difficult for them. They have to charge more because they're selling less. It's like Walmart can charge $5 for a widget, but the local mom-and-pop store has to charge $8 for a widget just to break even. When you're selling less of something, you have to sell more of it to make up the difference. And finally, I want to just note this. They've told us that they're going to pay for it. All the gas station owners, Victor isn't here tonight, Mr. Bullos is here, they have told us they're the ones that are going to eat this thing. And I don't really have a reason to think that they won't. A few weeks ago, we raised the solid waste tax 0.5%. They didn't come talk to us. You notice that? They didn't come and say, hey, we don't like this. This is terrible. We're going to eat this. Because they're a monopoly, I think they can just pass the thing on. I don't believe these guys can pass those things on. I took some time during the last couple months to talk to gas station owners that are in Kitsap County because I have friends down there. I said, they have no skin in the game up here. I said, you know, what would happen if we did this? And they all said, two of them, I want to be very clear, Carlberg and Herdman, they said, the gas station owner will pay for this. So if the citizens of Ferndale pass this thing, I believe that most of this will be absorbed by the small gas station owners. And I frankly like the fact that we have one here in Ferndale. I'm like a lot of people. I have a van that holds 30 gallons. When I'm near Costco, I fill it up. I admit that. But I practically 3 times a week, I'm at one of the local gas stations to put in $5 or $10 worth or whatever it is to help me get through the week. That is my lifestyle. That is my choice. That's what I do. I would miss it if these stations weren't there. So I agree with the statement the mayor made a few years ago when he sided with Lloyd and Brent and Malpezzi. He said, this is not the time to do it. And I don't think this is the time to do it. And I will vote against it.
Councilperson Goodrich, you had your hand up?
Yeah. I admit that we have bad roads here in Ferndale. Some of that we've inherited from the county. As our city limits have grown, we've inherited some poor roads from the county. Should we go back to the county and say, county, you know, because you built these roads and we inherited them, therefore you need to pay to bring them up to standards. I don't think that would fly. I can't support this for two reasons. One is we haven't even gone really a full year with the TBD. And we, you know, and really see what we're going to do or how that's formed. We asked, we got that in place. We just asked, you know, about the library, you know, to go back to the voters again and say, hey, we want some more, you know, raise the tax here again. Do you want to do this? I just can't see doing that at this time. And I'm not going to support this at this time.
Councilperson Olson?
You just voted on a TBD agenda tonight. Do you see regular road maintenance in any of that? No. All that money is already committed through, what, 2015, Janice? So that's 2020. I don't see what the problem is. Just let the voters decide. Why should we be the high and mighty to be seven and decide whether this thing gets the pass or not? This is something they want. We keep cutting it out every year, and there's nothing getting done. Potholes are everywhere. Streets are crumbling, and we have to, by a miracle, she's managed to get something. So it gets done. I don't see what the problem is in letting them vote. And if they vote, fine. If they don't, they don't.
Councilperson Hansen.
Well, in response to that first, if letting them vote is the right way to go, then why aren't we out there with a bond issue letting them vote on the Thornton Road overpass that we all agree is very sorely needed? Or why aren't we letting them vote on a levy lid increase, which we can also be guaranteed that only the citizens would pay? I have some thoughts about the gas tax. Number one, it's not going to be everyone in Ferndale that pays it, because there are a lot of people that don't gas up in Ferndale. They gas up when they go to work in Bellingham, they gas up, and they go to the off-brand stations, or they go out to the ARCO station at Slater Road, because it's less expensive. So, no, not everyone gases up in Ferndale, so it's not going to be a tax for everyone. I'm not convinced that the gas station owners can pass this through. It's not like they can say, okay, you have you pumped 20 gallons of gas today, so I need an extra 20 cents before you pull away from the pump. If you could make them do that, I probably would support it. But that's not what's going to happen. What's going to happen is the gas station owner, at the end of the month, is going to get a bill. And he's going to have to pay that bill on 75,000 gallons, it's $9,000 a year. If it's a 75,000 gallons per month. And if that's an extra cost to the gas station owner, you can say all you want about it going to become, figure it out. It's 75,000 is it 750 a month.
Just that's the thing. 2 zeros.
Yeah. 35,000. Oh, I said 75,000 is $9,000 a year. Now, if you want to take that to half of that, it'd be $4,500 a year. It depends on what you pump.
That's 35,000.
A month.
2 zeros.
Yeah. A month. Yeah. Well, that's exactly the same figure that I was giving. Except I used 75,000 instead of 35,000. If the message gets out there to the public that the gas station owner is going to pay this, you don't have to worry about it because they weren't going to be able to raise their cost of any, it's going to pass. Mm-hmm. I'd vote for it if I were Joe Blow out in the community and I knew that this gas station owner can't raise that a penny because the competition and the market just doesn't allow it. Hey, they're charging too much for gas already. We all know that, right? So let them stick them for another penny. I, I'm sorry, there's just too many unknowns. I'm not convinced that they're going to be able to pass that through. I'm not convinced that it's going to... Of course we need... We could go out for a bond issue to fix roads, too. There are several ways to do this. We don't have to do it through a penny border tax.
You all have a great discussion. I have Councilperson Watson and Councilperson Ingram waiting up. I'm asking your permission, because we're approaching our time, to 9:15, and that way I'll make sure to push you to 9:15. So we're going to go past 9. It appears we'll go past 9.
You have the authority to do that. You have the authority to do that. Remember?
Oh, that's right. Thank you very much. Too bad. Okay, Councilperson Watson and Ingram. We're on a 9:15.
Take it away. I don't like it.
Thank you. Thank you.
You amended the council rules of procedure.
They're gone now. They're off in the bomber.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
It's amended. Too bad for you.
He gets a one-time.
I get a one-time freebie.
And you just spent 2 minutes talking about it.
No, that was
it. No, we're 10 o'clock's our normal time.
After the deadline of 9 p.m., yeah. Mayor gets one chance.
All right, so you're wasting my time. I'm not recognizing you. Councilperson Watson.
Y'all make me crazy. Okay, I understand that a lot of you are afraid to put this out there because you're afraid it's going to pass. So I'm just telling you, that's fine. If you don't want to do it, then don't do it. But we are going to have a conversation because we do not have enough money to maintain our roads. And if you don't want to do this, that's fine, but it's not going to go away. We still have to do maintenance. We don't have enough money to fix the roads that are broken, let alone do the basic maintenance that we need to do. And if you don't want to do it because you're, you know, afraid that people are going to pass it and, you know, terrible things will happen, that's fine. Then we are going to have to talk about a levy. We're going to have to talk about something.
I'm not afraid it's going to pass. That's not why.
Well, whatever. I'm just saying, we need money to fix the roads. If you don't want to do this, fine. And the next time we have a committee meeting for Public Works, please come forward with a way that we're going to raise about $50,000 a year to do maintenance.
Your legislature may give you that option after they stick 10 cents.
Yeah.
Maybe car tabs.
Maybe you prefer that. Maybe you prefer to charge $20 for every single car tab in the city. Every single car tab. Just we could do it just like that. That would be really fair.
As a fleet owner, I'm really excited about that.
Yeah.
Councilperson Ingram?
I think so. Well, a couple of things. I fuel up locally. I do not buy fuel in Bellingham. I do not buy fuel anywhere within 100 miles of Ferndale. My vehicles can get to wherever I'm going. I can go to Seattle and back. No problem. So I buy fuel exclusively in Ferndale, unless I'm on a long road trip. When I'm over at the gas station where I buy fuel, and I'm sorry I don't buy fuel from Bob, and it's got nothing to do with Bob. I love him dearly. He's a great businessman. I had a very bad experience with Shell gasoline. It just destroyed an engine one time, and it was years ago.
Not yours, Bob.
It was years and years ago. But anyway, that just is me. I sit over at the gas station. I'm on a Sunday night, and I'm filling up my pickup truck, and I turn around, and I realize that I'm the only vehicle in that gas station with Washington plates on. The only one. So I pulled over to the side in the grass, and I sat there, and I watched. And it was Canadian after Canadian after Canadian heading north. They pull off, fuel up, get back on, and they're gone. But they don't just fill their tank. The thing that was kind of scary to me, they fill their tank, then they open up the back of the SUV and they pump about 6 or 7 or 8 5-gallon gas cans full of fuel, close the door with their kids sitting in the back seat and drive off. This is brilliant. But my point is that the only reason that I kind of tend to favor this is that the Canadians are going to be paying the bulk of it. From what I've seen in most of the stations around town, boy, there's a lot of Canadians buying gas in this town. And it's not just a citizen. I mean, we have people that say all the time, oh, I don't buy gas in Ferndale. It's too expensive. I go to Costco. Well, that's fine. But the Canadians stop here because this is the last city between here and the border that is easy to get on and off the freeway and get gas. Blaine, it's not that easy. You're heading for the border crossing. You've got to get off the freeway, and you've got a truck halfway across town to get to a station. Here is on, off, gone. And they're here by the hundreds on the weekends, thousands. So let the Canadians pay for it.
Councilperson Metzler?
Yeah, Councilmember Hansen made me think of something. I think the citizens think that Shell is going to pay this penny or that Chevron, who are they? I don't think they realize it's small, independent business owners who, as we've heard, how would you start up a gas station today? It would just be so prohibitive. What this all kind of reminds me tonight, which makes me rather uncomfortable, is watching those hearings when Congress grills somebody from the banking or somebody from big oil and just tears them apart. And kind of feel like Mr. Bell kind of went through that. And I'm not particularly comfortable with this, especially since this is the third time now this has come to us. I understand why. But like I said, this has disappeared for a while. And I really urge council to not do this. I really think it's a bad idea.
Councilperson Goodrich.
I just want to respond to Councilmember Watson's thing about the road repair. I think we really need, as a council, to look at a whole overall picture instead of saying, well, let's take 50,000, you know, 50,000 here, and then in 6 months we say, oh, let's raise the car tabs, or let's do this, or let's go out for a bond that Councilmember Hansen said, you know, to do. I think
no,
we.
No, I didn't say we should do
no,
that.
No, you know, as an option, you
it
know, type
implied.
Of. I think maybe we need to really come up with a comprehensive plan, and then go for it instead of nickel and diming here and there or whatever. Because I hate to say, let's do the you know the penny a gallon tax now, and then 6 months we're going to raise car tabs because we didn't get enough. And then in 6 months we're going to raise the levy or, you know, do this or whatever. I want to, I'll admit that I buy probably 95% of my gas here in Ferndale and about half of it at Bob's station, along with my donut and Diet Coke in the morning. I like that convenience. I like to be able to, you know, to do the gas and get, you know, the drink and stuff there. I have to admit that I've been buying a lot at Pilot, too, just because their price is cheaper. And I just can't support this at the time. I think we, as a group, we need or somehow come back with a more collective idea how we're going to pay for the road repairs instead of a little bit here and there.
Okay, I only have my 9:15 extension, so I think you've all done a great job of doing your opinion. You're getting close to maybe having big boys and girls and making a decision. So, Councilperson Olson?
When we sat through the budget talks back in, what was that, November, one of the first things that got yanked was Janice's street maintenance budget. I think it was $100,000.
Yep.
And we were going to revisit this, and we were going to bring it back. And guess what? We're getting close to November again, and we haven't done a damn thing. So to sit here and say it's not right, it's not this, when is right? When are you going to find the money to start fixing the streets? And with that, let's just call for the question and get it over with, because I don't think anybody's going to change their mind.
Is that a motion?
Yes, it is.
So it's a motion to call for a question. It needs a motion.
Second. The motion to... move the previous question.
Okay.
That's
so,
two-thirds vote.
Okay, so no discussion requires a two-thirds vote. This is the vote to go to the vote. So all in favor. Can you listen well enough?
I'm good.
Okay. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Okay. No more discussion. We're going right to the vote. We know the motion. I don't think it needs to be restated. It's pretty easy.
Call by name. Roll call.
Okay, roll call. Probably a good point. Okay, roll call vote.
Councilmember Watson.
Aye.
Councilmember Hansen.
No.
Councilmember Olson.
Aye.
Councilmember Ingram.
Aye.
Councilmember Muxler.
No.
Councilmember Zimmerman.
Aye.
Councilmember Goodrich.
No.
Okay, so to restate this, it will go. We are going to go to the voters in
November.
Okay, moving on. Mayor reports and comments. To bring you further bad news, we've always wondered when the sequester would basically hit and affect Ferndale. We saw the first effect of that on the senior center. They basically had a grant that paid for part of their lunch
food for the seniors. Shows you how quick things happen. It's May 17th that basically they're losing 10,500 in terms of food that goes into their lunch program. They're trying to work out a deal in terms of with Whatcom County where they get more volunteers in terms of food prep. They're looking for volunteers. They wanted me to bring it to the council. I basically responded to them saying, you know, a request of the city for $10,500 in May is just not appropriate. We don't do that. Kathy has offered to go down with me and stand behind me while they throw rocks at me. And I appreciate that. We will set up that meeting. Kathy's even, you know, volunteered to kind of help on some of their meals. But kind of an example of when people ask about the sequester in our federal government, well, when it, does it affect me? Well, yeah, it does affect us, and I think this is we're going to see more of this. So you're informed. I haven't brought it to council. I don't intend to bring it to council for a budget amendment. We're going to have to see how we work on this.
Along that line, I was contacted by someone from the senior citizen center.
So was I.
How many others were?
We all were.
We all were.
Okay. So I didn't. If you want to bring it forward as a council, as a mayor, I chose not to bring this forward to you. Councilperson Ingram?
Just a quick side note on that. According to the news story I read today in the week, a news magazine we take, sequester's dead because the administration caved on the air traffic controllers. It's all gone.
No, it's not. They have to vote for it.
This is going away as rapidly as dry ice.
Well, Congress is voting.
Because it's
we know that this money is as of May 17th is gone. So.
But it'll be back.
Okay, other mayor reports. This I guess this was for the city. I'll be out of town on business Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. So Mel, you're in charge in case the city falls.
So we can
apart.
Plan the coup for Saturday morning.
Yeah.
Who do you want me to fire?
Yeah, you just pick somebody. That's it for mayor reports. Council reports. Any council reports? Okay.
Oh
we'll
God,
go to department reports. Blissful. Community Development Director.
We have two meetings coming up. One of them, they're both for the jail. The county is holding a scoping meeting next Thursday, May 16th. Not next Thursday, but May 16th from 7 to 8:30 at the Horizon Middle School. Doors will open at 6. That next Wednesday on the 22nd, the city council and planning commission are going to have a joint meeting. That's at WeQ, starts at 6.
Does that take place of our regular council meeting, or
no.
is that in
no,
addition
is,
to?
In addition, yeah. And we'll have some people in attendance. Judging from the planning commission, we'll have some people at that meeting. That's why we kind of, by the time you get council and, the reason why we picked WeQ, by the time you get council and planning commission, then you're going to get public, we will get some people at that meeting. So, okay, city administrator?
What's up?
City clerk?
I'm good.
Public works?
Just one announcement. On May 23rd, we will be holding our annual public works open house at WeQ from 5 to 7. And that'll be to gather public comment on our 6-year tip. And then we'll also have our utility CIPs there. We'll be talking about street projects, Horton Vista, and church. So I know it's going to be a pretty busy week with the city council, the joint meeting, and our open house. But that week is our National Public Works Week. We always hold open house during that week. So
cake.
What's that?
There's cake, too.
Yeah,
no.
There's always cake.
No.
Not those cupcakes. Those cupcakes were kind of old last time. Okay, police, are you awake back there? Okay, council, motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. We are adjourned.